All right, here we go. Welcome back, everybody. It is the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin once again back here with Dom to break down the Ghost Island finale. I can't believe the season's already over. So much to get to. First of all, Dom, how are you doing today?
I'm doing okay. So this is take four of this introduction now. We tried doing this a few days ago. The internet was down. We had to keep restarting everything. At that time, I was doing great. Then I was doing great. And then by take three, I was not doing so great. But now I'm back up there again. I've gone through the whole roller coaster of emotion. So hopefully we can keep it upbeat for the time being.
Yeah, as soon as you started talking, I swear to you, you would not be able to hear this. But if we use my version of the recording, the listeners will hear the internet starts crackling once again as soon as Dom started talking here. And it seemed to improve by the end of the sentence. So I think we can roll on with it. But I was very nervous that we may be back here for a take five. But thankfully, Dom, I think we should be good going forward. So much, as I said, to be getting to today as we are back to wrap up Survivor Ghost Island. But a couple of things. At least one thing for me before we end up doing that I definitely do want to flag up. We are just about to, this Survivor offseason, within the next few days, I would imagine, be diving into our next edition of a classic reality Patreon rewatch that we've been doing. We did Big Brother 10 recently and Big Brother 7 before that. We are finally going to be doing a Survivor season now that the regular Survivor offseason is upon us. The patrons have voted, and it seems that very soon we are going to be back here to be talking through one of the all-time greats, Survivor Heroes versus Villains, is going to be that first Survivor classic rewatch season for us. So patreon.com/Dom and Colin is where you want to go if you want to get on board with all of that, because that should be a ton of fun that should be lasting for a lot of this offseason, because I'm sure that's going to take quite a while to get through.
Yeah, I was expecting the patrons to choose that, and I'm very glad they did, because it's a personal favorite of mine, one of my favorite seasons of any reality show, and I know that view was shared by a lot of people, but on top of that, it's also just one of the most iconic seasons of Survivor, or really any reality show, and there's so much outside the show stuff to get into that we can take a real deep dive, and I'm very much looking forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. And I mentioned there's going to be a ton, obviously, to get through with Heroes versus Villains. And for the first time ever, we're going to have a set release schedule, the way the Heroes versus Villains podcast will work. So we don't end up, I could see it being the case where we would feel compelled to spend, 2.5 hours there on certain weeks for certain episodes. And we don't want to do that and make you guys wait for us to have time to record those long ass Survivor episodes. So what we're going to do is this for Heroes versus Villains is we are going to start recording, do about an hour, wrap up the recording, and then resume wherever we left off the next time. And that way we feel comfortable. We can bank some. We can put these out whatever day of the week it ends up being. There will be a day of the week for new episodes coming out. So patreon.com/Dom and Colin. I think that's adequate whoring for me at this point, Dom. Anything else you wanted to bring up?
I will note that our regular Survivor episodes are also nominally on a weekly schedule as well. But so make of that what you will. But I'm confident we can stick to that at least in the early weeks.
Well, our normal Survivor schedule is weekly, but it could come out on Saturday, Sunday, Monday, or Tuesday, realistically. And these, I think we will just have a set day of the week. You can expect it. That's when it will come out. For the first time ever, which is, it only took us 6.5 years to get to that point as podcasters.
The only thing I have before we dive into the Ghost Island finale here is, this time last year, I put out a survey to see what people's opinions on the show were, just to get some more detailed feedback. That went down really well. It was very useful for us to just digest all of that. So I'm going to revive that and put that back up again. So anyone who started listening in the past year, you can go fill that out. And then if you fill that out last time, go through and fill it out again if you like. If your opinions have changed, if we've improved or got worse over the last year, we want to know how. And so any constructive criticism, things we can improve, that would be great to hear about. But also the things that you do like, tell us why, because we can't keep doing what we're doing if we don't know what that is meant to be. So as always, very eager for any feedback, however much detail or time you want to spend on that.
Yeah, and I guess Twitter would probably be the place to go if you are interested in participating with that. Yeah, at DomHRV on Twitter, and I'm sure I will retweet it at Colin Stone, although I will do none of the prep work as far as actually organizing it. This is Dom taking all of the initiative on that. Dom, let's get into our big finale, which I guess was, I think it was a week ago today at the time that we're recording this. It's a Wednesday. As I guess kind of has been thematic for the entire season for me, the week really flew by in between, like this whole season really flew by, but I think part of the reason Survivor tends to fly by is we don't just take it for granted, but people all over America seem to just be loving Survivor even 18 years after it started. Jeff kicks off this finale by announcing Survivor is once again the number one show on Wednesday nights, which I think is just truly incredible given, as I said, that we are 18 full years into this concept. And I thought it was really interesting. The place I wanted to start off this finale recap was something that had absolutely nothing to do with Ghost Island itself, but I thought it was really worth noting that Jeff, in these introductions, I don't know if it stood out to me last time, but it really stood out this time. It seems like he's tailoring his live from the studio in LA right at the beginning, a couple of times in a row now, to the little kids who are watching, talking about kids, you know, your parents are being nice to let you stay up. You got to go to bed right as soon as it's over, but we know this is a really exciting night for you. And I think that's a really interesting, as I guess the words I've used so far, interesting and noteworthy, just because it seems like Survivor began as a show back in the early seasons, almost, it was for everyone, anyone could watch it, but it seemed like the intended audience was adults, almost, like, not just primarily, but almost exclusively, and it really does feel like lately Jeff has been doing, it's particularly in these finales and reunions, Jeff has been going really far out of his way to make it clear, hey, we want 8-year-olds and so forth in on this show too.
Do you think that might be an underexplored angle to this increasing focus on twists and blindsides and advantages and big moves and so on? Because that is something which is very easily digestible to a younger crowd or to a less engaged crowd, whereas it is harder for an 8-year-old to appreciate the minutiae of good social gameplay.
Right. Well, I do think that may have something to do with it. I think they are definitely, the reason I bring this up is because I think they are very much making a point to both the parents and the kids, hey, we want you here too. And I do understand that. Like, for Survivor to be the number one show 18 years later, they have to be doing something right as far as getting the viewership numbers where they need to be. But it has felt to me, Dom, like there has been almost a forgotten kind of like half generation, people like roughly your age, I would say, who were not processing what was going on when Survivor first came to be, or in the case of current 8-year-olds, we're not even close to alive at that point. I feel like essentially what this strategy to me would signal is like their priority is, okay, we've got the people from millennials generation and Generation X that are going to watch this show. We've already got that market. What we need now are those kids, the kids of that group. And I feel like we're missing out on all of the people who would love Survivor if it had ever been culturally relevant, that are, you know, in high school now, like Michael Yerger's age. I guess there are plenty of them, but I feel like no real effort was made to bring in that kind of, whatever your group is called. I guess we're both technically millennials, but I feel like you're the younger millennial and I'm the older millennial.
Yeah, you are bordering on Gen X, or at least Gen X adjacent.
Right? I am not bordering on Gen X, first of all. I graduated high school in 2005. Which is the arbiter of Gen X, is pre-2000.
If you say so. But yeah, I think I see what you're getting at, where there does seem to be this, I don't want to say micro-targeting, because it's not even individuals. It's more just these broad swathes of the fan base. But there is this focus on the people who have been watching since the dawn of time and will be watching until the end of time, or however long the show ends up lasting for. And then also this increasing effort to capture those floating viewers, if you like, who maybe are not wedded to the concept of Survivor and need that kind of flashy entertainment to draw them in and keep them engaged in the first place.
Right. And to get to my even larger point about why I bring all of this up, it ties into why I was so, and continue to be so, turned off by the Heroes, Healers, Hustlers endgame and this push to make Survivor easily digestible by people who probably can't even read, or who, many of people who can't read still watching this show, is I have seen exactly what happens when you do that, because I used to watch Big Brother. When you start manipulating the game to get the result you think America wants and to make everything centered towards little kids being the new demographic that you're hoping to bring in, this shit falls off the rails so fast. And I am just terrified that that's going to happen to Survivor. And I didn't want to get into like a massive long-winded thing here at the top of the show, but I did know I at least wanted to bring it up before I was like sitting here prepping prepping my notes, and I was hoping it would be kind of a smaller, just kind of offhand reference, and then I looked at my DVR to start rewatching the finale, and the episode is literally called It's Game Time, Kids.
I do see your point, because there are many Big Brother contestants who probably don't know how to read either, so you can tell just how far that franchise has sunk, and we definitely don't want the one that we actually care about, Survivor, meeting the same fate.
Right, it's completely, for my money, out of a place of love. I've seen the darkest timeline that Big Brother has gone down, and I would, as someone who has just always loved Survivor since season one, not episode one, but episode six or seven, I would hate to see it go down that same path by making exactly the same kind of mistakes that Big Brother just did. All right, Dom, enough of that. Let's get into the actual goings-on here of this Survivor finale. Now, of course, as regular listeners will know, we came into the finale just figuring it's just a matter of which order Sebastian and Angela get voted out in sixth and fifth. Of course we know it's going to come down to these big four that we've seen so much about. And so I was very much during the beginning of this finale, almost not disengaged by any stretch, but just waiting for that to happen, waiting for whichever of Sebastian and Angela to go out first and then the other one to go out right afterwards. And so when Sebastian started getting a lot of build up before the challenge about now is his time to start shining and people are finally recognizing, oh man, this guy could, now that we're so close to the end, potentially play spoiler here. I had my sights pretty set on Sebastian being that sixth place person about 10 minutes into this finale.
Yeah, as soon as it looks like Sebastian might be relevant in any way, you know that his card is marked. And sure enough, that's what happened. Although we got him playing into the wider story in some sense, where Wendell ends up winning the challenge, takes Sebastian and Angela on the reward with him. And that sends Laurel into... And Laurel has been a very composed player so far over the entire course of the season. This is the one time where she really shows any emotion and wears that on her sleeve.
I would say Laurel got this season's kind of Brad Culpepper treatment, where during Game Changers, people will remember, like, I was thinking Brad was going to win Game Changers because of how good he looked compared to how good I expected him to look during the first 13 episodes. But then when the finale came around, within 5 minutes, it was very clear, okay, they're putting a whole new look on Brad here. He is obviously not going to come away out of this episode with $1 million. And I thought Laurel almost got similar kind of treatment here, where for the first 13 episodes, even, you know, at certain points being frustrated or not understanding why she wouldn't make certain moves, virtually every week I would come in and compare Laurel to Denise Stapley and say that was the kind of great vibe I was getting from her out there, seeing her out there on the island. And it felt, you're right, like as soon as this finale began, Laurel took a totally different kind of turn, and one that I definitely did not see coming at all. Like I didn't expect her to come in here and get buried or to anything close to that. I thought she would continue to look just kind of passive, and that would be why she would lose.
Well, I didn't get the vibe at all that she was buried, so can you elaborate on that quickly?
I thought it was interesting that they would show her this specific final six situation being mad at Wendell about that. Like, it does finally make sense, but the buried part that I would bring up, like, it does make sense from her perspective why, of course, she wouldn't want Angela and Sebastian off getting food. But to leave in the quote of her saying, why are we letting goodwill determine what decisions right. We make? Like, that's burying Laurel.
You notice that for sure. You pick up on the irony, but I don't think in any larger sense she was buried here, because for as much as Dom was calling her out for being emotional about it, but first of all, Laurel being outwardly emotional, like, if she's a 4 out of 10, that's her being incandescent with rage. That was the angriest Laurel could ever get. And when she said the gloves are off, that was the calmest I've ever heard that phrase uttered by anyone on national television. but also, I think her getting upset about this to some degree is perfectly justified. Like, when Wendell is taking on a reward to butter up and also fatten up Sebastian and Angela, who are the only two other people outside of herself and Jonathan who are really eligible for this, firstly, it's just a transparent plea for their jury votes, but also, surely if they're the next on the docket to be voted out, why is Wendell giving them food, giving them sustenance, giving them a better chance of winning those competitions, which are the only things in theory which could challenge their run down this final stretch?
I would say Wendell's argument would be, and it may not be a good one, but I think he would spin it as, we're so solid, it doesn't matter who I bring with us, and these guys just haven't eaten. Like, they're the people who haven't gone on rewards, and that seemed to genuinely play a role for him. And if I'm remembering correctly, I feel like Dominic at least signed off with that logic of, like, yeah, they haven't gotten to eat anything. Angela hasn't had a single reward meal, like, at least since the post-merge, if not the entire, if not even longer than that at the very least. So I do think there is some angle to that. But I also understand what you're saying, which is if you're Laurel, who cares would probably be the answer, and they're going to get to eat plenty when they're on the jury in 2 days.
Yeah, so in a purely self-interested perspective, it doesn't make any sense for you. But also, I think part of what drove her up the wall about that was Dom being so incongruous about it, where he is just chirping, oh, well, they haven't eaten, so of course we got to give them something, as if he would ever give that point of view himself in any other context, right? He is clearly just trying to justify Wendell's decision, and it's unjustifiable, and this is the only thing he can really think of to make it seem respectable. And you can tell that she saw right through it, and he saw right through it too. He was making this attempt to torture her, but he knew what the deal was too.
Yeah, but I mean, hey, she had her chance to win the competition and do the same thing herself, or not do the same thing herself and prove the bond being stronger with Wendell and Dom, or whatever she wanted to do. But do you think that Wendell, if he knows Laurel isn't going to be too thrilled about it, should have done something else? Or is this the right move to butter up and fatten up these future jurors, even if it means they might be slightly better in the next competitions?
I think it might be the right move anyway, although I think there is a case also for just, if you really do want to move to the final four with at least one of Laurel and Donathan, just take them. And I guess maybe Donathan is a lost cause at this point after his outburst last time. So maybe it's just Laurel and somebody else. But it feels so transparent when it is exactly the two outsiders who in theory are being picked off next. Like anyone, even Sebastian and Angela themselves could identify what that move meant.
I feel like there's also potentially some angle that Wendell could spin of not wanting to leave them with Donathan, or not wanting any weird, or not wanting to leave them, Donathan and Laurel. Like, I think when you're Wendell here, I don't know how concerned he realistically was about some sort of uprising happening, but I do think there is merit in trying to keep the people that would come together apart.
That's true, but you can also accomplish that by leaving them at camp and taking Laurel and Donathan with you on that reward. So I don't know if that's the best angle to take with her either.
Okay. But it seems neither here nor there. And I guess in Laurel's mind, it does seem here or there which pair of them he takes. So, okay, fair counterpoint there, Dom. One actually interesting thing that Laurel mentioned that I wanted to at least hear what you had to say about, if we'd maybe even heard more about this. When Laurel was mad at them for taking particularly Angela, it was left in the episode her saying, Angela is the one person we need to beat in the challenge tomorrow, which obviously we'll go on to see Sebastian end up getting voted out here. But that seemed interesting to me, that the initial plan, as far as I can tell, or at least as far as Laurel thought, which I would imagine would be the real plan, is Angela is going to go before Sebastian, even though I would imagine they'd be more worried about him.
Yeah, I think it's tempting for us to write off both of them together as these ciphers who it doesn't even matter which order they go out in because they're destined for sixth and fifth anyway. But if there is a meaningful difference between the two of them, then that is something that you have to pay attention to. And there are rumblings from the Jury Speaks videos that Sebastian, had he made it there, might actually have stood a shot, which seems completely outrageous to me. But then this is time for your biannual, or maybe biennial, not quite sure which, reminder that Brandon Hans would have won a jury vote. So anything is possible, and it would not shock me completely if Sebastian, by virtue of not being talented enough to actually do anything, would also have not rubbed anyone the wrong way, and in the process could hoover up some jury votes.
Have we heard, would Angela have been, probably not the winner, but I could see Angela just not offending people and picking up some jury votes if she had made it. Have we heard anything about that?
I don't think so. Maybe the crucial difference is we see when all this discussion around fire making is happening, Angela seems like the champion of fire, as Dom sees it, who he can nominate to throw in the ring and hopefully dethrone Wendell. I don't know if he would have as much confidence in Sebastian, so in the survival aspect, maybe if that's a relevant thing that you're looking towards with this new Final Four format, if you think you want specifically Angela there to maybe go against somebody rather than Sebastian, that is actually an argument now, because even if Sebastian's better in normal challenges and he's an immunity threat, now that Final Four's in play, you have that, and then also the second component to that, too. So maybe that's weighing on his mind.
I think Angela may have been the fire champion just by process of elimination. If Laurel has never made a fire in her life, because when they were looking for footage of, oh, Angela, she tends to the fire from time to time. That's my best bet right now. It's just her throwing some wood on the fire. It's no, there's not a clip of her starting the fire at any point. It's just her putting more wood on an already lit fire.
Yeah, queen of pretending how to make fire. We stand Angela. The Angela army is in full effect.
Yeah. So, all right. I'm sure we have plenty more on the fire challenge down the line. But, Dom, we have Sebastian here at Final Six with his extra vote, which could come in tremendously handy when we have both Donathan, who has been itching to flip on this Wendell and Dominic group for a little while, and also Angela here as potentially people he could bring in. And even though that's only 3 out of 6 people, with that extra vote, they theoretically could have majority as long as they keep this plan under wraps. And Angela's thrilled to be in on the plan for once. She says, quote, "I'm in the loop. It feels amazing. I actually feel like I have a little bit of power." Dom, what could possibly go wrong here for Sebastian and his extra vote that no one knows about? Finally, we waited all season for this spot where it's all going to come crashing down masterfully.
It turns out we have some breaking news. The Stangela army is officially disbanded. They're all going their separate ways because Angela, in what might be the most single most infuriating and inexplicable move of the season, just rats out this plan back to Dom. And I guess in her defense, kind of, it's not like she is actively going up to him and spilling the beans. It's more that she has no poker face, and so Dom can clearly tell that something's up, and at the first hint of pressure, she cracks and just reveals all the details to him. So I can, in light of that, I can almost understand why Laurel and others might be so reluctant to make a move if that move involves Angela, because if it does, then any hope of blindsiding Dom and having him not play his idol might just go completely out the window.
Yeah, we've seen this problem arise in seasons past, for sure, where you would love to have someone willing. Like, the numbers are all theoretically there, but you can't just get this random wild card on your side to just do the straightforward thing, which was really interesting. And I think you are right. Like, she frames it in terms of, like, not having a good poker face and Dom just immediately being on to her. And as they're sitting there on the beach, I thought it was so funny, where he's like, "Angela, what's going on? Come on, tell me what's up. Clearly something's off with you." And she goes, "Well, you know what? You would be sketched out if I didn't tell you. So here's every single detail of how everyone's trying to blindside you. Like, you're not going to drop it until I give you the full truth." And it seems like a spot where most people would try to come up with some kind of compelling lie. But I do understand at least that impulse of, like, Dominic, I think, is a lot like me, where if he senses something is off and someone's lying to him, it's not going to get just dropped. It's not going to be, "Okay, I guess I'll talk to you later." There's clearly something going on, and I need to know what it is.
And anyone who has ever played Secret Hitler with you can testify to that personally. But Angela doesn't even try to deflect this by saying something like, "Oh, Sebastian said he might vote for you," or something to that effect, which would be general but maybe specific enough that Dom would buy it and not see that as a realistic threat. Instead, she tells him literally everything, including the fact that Sebastian has this extra vote, which is the crucial detail that is going to unravel this entire plan.
I mean, Dom must have been sitting there like, assuming she's telling me the truth, "That's a freebie. Thanks for the heads up on that."
Either that, or it's a much more creative lie than we've ever come to expect from Angela. So I think we can take that to the bank and rely on it.
Yeah. One other interesting thing that I thought was worth getting into from this kind of final six, people are turning on Dom and he's finding out about it. After Wendell ends up getting this necklace here, I thought it was Dom had a quote that got left in that really stood out to me. Or I guess it was before Wendell got the necklace. He said to Wendell, "Go get that necklace today, and then both of us are locked in through the final four." Now, obviously, we know they both have one real idol, but it seemed to me like if Dom is framing it in those terms to Wendell at final six, like, he is telling Wendell, "I'm good for two more rounds. I have two idols that are going to get me through these next two rounds. So as long as you get the necklace, we're both good till final four." And this is obviously not made explicit on the show that Wendell didn't know Dom's David Wright idol was fake. But I could very much see something along those lines being in play. And actually, I reached out to Dominic to ask him literally just this one question is the only thing I want to know before we do our season finale and review, season in review podcast. I said, "Did Wendell know that your David Wright idol was fake?" And he said he knew something was up with it, but he didn't know exactly what, which to me means Wendell thought it had some kind of real powers, that Dom was not truthful with Wendell about that just being a fake idol.
And hopefully we get the chance to ask Dom many more questions at some point in the future. But for now, that small morsel will have to do. So when
have him on to ask him one question each, and then that'll be the podcast. Like a genie where we've used up our wishes.
That could be our shortest episode ever, just a 5-minute vignette where we just ask Dom something and then kick him off again. But if you're Wendell hearing that, how reliable do you think it is? Like, because this is a situation where I think Dom is trying to hint as strongly as possible without making it so explicit that it becomes suspicious that he has two real idols, or at the very least, he has an idol and something else in that bag of tricks that can get him through the next two rounds. But for Wendell, how much credibility do you assign to that, and is it worth taking the shot anyway?
I think there is a lot of extra credibility, given that this is a Ghost Island season, where if he's showing Wendell this idol, and everyone else, as we'll get to at this final six tribal council, in a situation where they all know, okay, hidden immunity idols this season are relics from prior seasons. We've already seen Michael play Ozzy's stick, and that wasn't an idol the first time, but it had actual powers this time. There's pretty much no better situation you can draw up than having a verified relic, David Wright's idol from Millennials versus Gen X, and what choice do the rest of the players have but to believe that that might, like every other past idol, be just as real as all the others?
So I think the choice is to do what so many people have done and failed to do at various points throughout the season and demand to see the packaging, see the note that came with it, and cross-reference that or compare notes to see if the details that he's giving you actually line up properly.
And my gut response was, well, he has the authentic note for what a real idol would say, but I believe each of them was individual, where it'll say,
yes,
this is Andrea Belke's idol, which people, and if he's saying this is David Wright's idol and doesn't have the appropriate paperwork for that, then you are totally right. Yes, and we see him when he gets up to explain what he just did, comment, doesn't this paper seem a little short to be an actual hidden immunity idol?
Right, and if he has two real idols, it stands to reason that he has two separate sets of packaging for it and two separate notes. So if you demand to see everything at the same time, then I think you can do a decent job of verifying that either way.
Okay, and this is something that has come up a little bit on Twitter that you brought up and gained a little bit of traction, but I would love to hear you dive into it further now.
Not too much traction, not that many likes or retweets, but a reasonable number, you know?
I don't want to go crazy. I don't want to oversell it. I'm not going to say your tweet went viral, but you certainly got a decent number of likes and retweets on an opinion you voiced saying, this final six is a perfect spot for Wendell to potentially be going for Dominic here. So get in a little more on that, especially when, obviously, I think people will understand, or like their first reaction is, well, Wendell knows he has this idol that he can play if he senses that anything's up. But why do you feel like this was a potentially missed opportunity for Wendell?
So the way I see it, as soon as Wendell wins that final six challenge, he himself is locked for final four because he has immunity for this round and the idol in reserve for next round. And then when he gets a final four, if Dom is there, he might be the second biggest challenge threat. But either way, he has a very good shot of winning that challenge. If Dom isn't there, he becomes the runaway favorite to win that half, or part one, if you want to call it that. And then even if he doesn't, he has this redraw. He has his second shot in the form of the fire challenge, which, based on everything we heard in the finale, it seems like he was very well placed to win if he had made it there. He was the one teaching Laurel how to make fire, and I think maybe teaching Angela at some point too, although that could be fake news. Don't want to go too deep on that. But either way, I think if Wendell ends up in that fire challenge, he has a pretty good shot against whoever he ends up there against. So if Wendell gets to Final Four, he has a very good chance of making it to Final Three, and we know he's getting to Final Four. So you can pencil in Wendell for the Final Three at this point, maybe with an eraser ready in case that doesn't come to pass, but he's looking towards the end game now. And knowing that he's safe, there's no risk that there would be customarily for making these bold plays and going after someone, even if they have an idol, even if that could blow back on someone else. So he knows that Dom has an idol. Dom is his biggest threat, both in challenges and for jury votes. Why not take any plausible shot at removing him from the game, however unlikely that may be? We've been debating this a bit off air, but I think even if you believe personally that Dom 100% has two real idols, so there's no way this plan can work, there's an argument for putting votes on him anyway, being seen to go against Dom, have a move that you can call your own. And I think when you know that The story of the season so far is Dom and Wendell as a unit running the show. For Wendell to make a move against Dom and Dom not to make a move against Wendell, that is a unique thing that you can hang your hat on when it comes to the jury votes. And the counter argument, I guess, is that if Dom can sniff that out and play one of his idols, then he can say, well, I counteracted that move and I outplayed you. But firstly, I think if he has two idols, then he just plays those and there's no outplaying involved. He just did what he had to do. And then if he doesn't have two real idols, then you have him dead to rights. As long as he doesn't win that final five challenge, if you put votes on him now, votes on him then, you get your biggest threat out of the game. And at that point, it's a coronation for Wendell. There's basically nothing anyone else can do about it.
Unless jury threat Sebastian sneaks through.
And that might be the actual darkest timeline in the entire game tree left at this point. So the argument here basically is, even if you think he has two real idols and you have a good reason to think that, and you can demand to see the paperwork now because you're safe, it's not even like any mishap on your part is going to ruin that relationship because your cards are face up. The game is playing itself at this point and you're just running the numbers to see what happens. So you can effectively demand from Dom to see the paperwork and to see the receipts. And if he can't provide those, then you can count your $1 million already. You can take your shot. And as long as you can beat him in that next challenge and then win one of those two challenges yourself, you're good. You're a millionaire. So if there's even a tiny chance that Dom doesn't have two real idols, you have to take the shot. And not taking the shot is throwing away so much accuracy that if Wendell didn't go on to win, or if he had lost by one vote, we would be looking back at this as one of the great missed opportunities of Survivor, I think. And it's the fact that the finale ended the way it did, and in such dramatic fashion, that this is kind of being lost in the shuffle, where by an hour into the show, we'd already completely forgot about everything that came before it.
Dom, you make some convincing points, although my counterpoint would be this, which is Wendell didn't do that and still went on to win the game. And as we know, every winner cannot be questioned. They played the best game by definition, and every move they made must have been right because the goal is to come out of the season as the winner, and that's what he accomplished. So how dare you, I guess, would be my follow-up question.
I don't know. I can't answer that. I'm not sure why I'm even here or why any of us are even here. Who among us has any insight there? But final thought on, or I guess one other argument to add to the pile there, is I think there is something to be said for the camaraderie that develops from being in on a move together, being part of this plot, this secret plan to oust one of the biggest villains left in the game. So when Wendell catches wind of this plan, if he's able to team up with Sebastian or Angela or Lowell or Donathan or whoever would end up being involved in that, I think there is something that bonds you together when you can collectively be in on the joke, be part of this plan to go after Dom, even if it doesn't end up working. If you're planning to send these people to the jury, or even if you're not, if they just end up there as casualties of Dom's idol plays, then those are votes which are more likely to go in your direction now, I think. And I think that heavily counteracts whatever argument Dom can have of saying, well, they came for me and I played my idol and that was great. Because I think on that metric, Dom is already winning. If it's about the most visible plays and the loudest moves and the sheer force of his game, he's already going to take that over you, whoever's inclined to vote on that basis. But for the people who are looking for someone that they can give their vote to for other reasons, this is another great reason you can add to that list.
Yeah, and it wouldn't shock me. We didn't end up seeing this on TV, but if Dom at Final Tribal Council had been saying, look, by the time it became realistic to turn on Wendell, he was winning the necklaces and had idols, and I couldn't do that. But he had a wide open shot at me and chose not to take it.
It really blunts Dom's claim to be this forceful, cutthroat player if you can say, I took a shot at him and he never took a shot at me. And he can come back and say, well, the way that immunities went down, that there was never a chance to take a shot, but Wendell put himself in that position right by winning those immunities at the right time. So for people who are voting on that basis, and there are usually a few of those on any given jury, then that's a really tough Gordian knot for Dom to get himself out of.
I was listening to the Big Brother live feed correspondence preview before they saw how the season played out, but them catching up, talking about how the Survivor season had been going lately. And I thought Brent made a really interesting point that we obviously didn't end up seeing come in or anything even close to it, but I would have probably been on the same page if we had, which is if one of Dom or Wendell brings the other one to the finals, I would vote for whoever got brought. I would not give my vote to whoever was foolish enough to bring their only competition with them.
Yeah, speaking of people who are losing points rapidly for being needlessly brash in public fora, Brent, I think, made a very good point there. But I think that's something which both Dom and Wendell were aware of, and you saw that Dom certainly did not want to take Wendell. Wendell, it seemed, was entertaining the idea of taking Dom. Even to the very end, he was living by this maxim of, I want to go up against the best, and I've been with this guy the whole way through, and if I'm trying to sell myself as this aggressive strategist, that's not even going to work. Dom's going to have me beat on that axis. Although you could argue, if Wendell lives up to that, Dom is not going to be in the game at that point, and so whatever he says doesn't matter because Wendell's winning 10-0, and who even cares what anybody says at that stage. So for me, it's like, there is this overwhelming imperative to get Dom out of the game, because at that point, who cares what Wendell does or does not do or does or does not say? He's winning, and nothing can really stand in his way. So I think if you have that shot lined up, you have to take it, and not doing so is an egregious mistake. One that didn't end up costing him, but we've made these comparisons in the past of these dynamic duos who made it deep in the game together, and one of them had the chance to cut the other to improve their own position, and whether or not they ended up taking it was often the big difference which gave one of them the $1 million and cost the other one the title too. So you think of Malcolm and Denise, our one big objection to Denise, maybe our only objection to Denise for the entire game that she played, was all of this was building towards taking Malcolm to the end and almost certainly losing to him. And the fact that she woke up to that at the last second and made the right play is a point in her favor, but it's one which there should have been no question about from the outset, right? Another pair which we haven't actually mentioned in this context so far, but maybe should have come up more, is Earl and Yao Man. And there are actually some striking parallels there, because both of them had idols at the final six. There was this plot against Yao Man, which Earl initially was not included in, and I think was aware of by the end, and he was willing to kind of let it happen, and if Yao Man sniffed it out and played his idol, that's fine, and if Yao Man went home, then that's fine too. But you had a similar setup going on there, and in that case, Earl was willing to cut Yao Man. Yao Man, it seemed, was not that willing to cut Earl, and I think had the Dreams deal not blown up in Yao Man's face, that would have been an interesting dynamic to see play out in the endgame there. So this is a tried and true thing that we've seen throughout Survivor history, and the member of that duo which is willing to cut the other usually ends up getting the better of things. Turns out that it was not going to cost Wendell either way here, but I think it easily could have done. And if you shift one jury vote, if Dom ends up winning 6-4, I think Dom's game looks very different and Wendell's game looks very different. And the entire reception to both that and the season, I think, would look unrecognizable from how it looks at the moment.
Right. We talked a little bit last week about something Kaz had said on Twitter a little while ago about how can people not see that Wendell is just a much more likable version of Chelsea Meisner, and he's going to go, I think Kaz meant, like, Dom's going to blow him out in the end, and he's just always been the sidekick. But I don't think that's entirely, which we obviously didn't see end up happening, but I don't think that's a completely terrible parallel either, where I don't think Kim and Chelsea were ever really realistically considering cutting each other, but it certainly doesn't help when the second most influential player in the game is also doing everything they can, it seems, to aid and abet the first player along the way.
The reason there might be a terrible parallel is because Chelsea was not that likable, and because Kim, for as much as Kim can pretend on RHAP that she ever thought she had a chance of losing to Chelsea, she knew that there was no chance of that happening. She knew that was she had the game locked up as soon as that final three was decided. So Kim, the fact that Kim can say that with a straight face and the people believe her is only further proof of how good Kim is, that she can miss people into believing just complete nonsense and we're willing to do it because of how charismatic she is. But regardless of that, I think that is the big difference. There is a big gulf in likability between the Chelsea Meisners and the Jervises of the world and the Wendells, who are serious threats who you have to take out of the game, or they're very dangerous if you let them get to the end.
Well, another pair that I feel like we've heard a lot of comparisons being made is JT and Steven and their job that they did in Token Sheens. And I think that may be even a better one for me, where Dom, I would say, winds up in the finals against the one guy he knew he did not want to be there against but had no choice, and that's who he ended up in the finals against. And I think history may remember that incorrectly, much like they do about Token Sheens, where Steven was definitely not trying to be in the finals against JT, and as we see play out here, Dom is obviously not trying to be in the finals against Wendell. That's just how the challenges fell.
And we always criticize JT for having this entire cast of people who were willing to just lay over and take it, who would take him to the finals and lose to him willingly and be happy about it. And instead, he packed his endgame with Steven and Eren, who were willing to take him out and were just looking for the right chance to do it.
Right. As we framed it before, Steven and Eren were probably the only people who made the merge, other than Tyson, who would not have taken JT to the final two, and that's who he found himself right there with.
And JT just won out, and none of this ever mattered anyway, so who even cares? But in that case, like, JT knew he for sure had the win on lock if he was able to make it there. It's just a question of how. And we can quibble with the how, but the fact that he made it kind of renders that all of that obsolete, because he won 7-0 and it was never even close. In this case, again, you have this serious toss-up between Dom and Wendell, and I'm not sure how competitive either of them thought it would be or how competitive the jury thought it would be. We have this this long-form interview from Kellen now on RFJP, where she said she thought Dom was going to win. She thought it was going to be her, maybe one or two other people in Wendell's corner. And the fact that it was going to be a 5-5 tie floored everybody in the room, including the producers and Jeff, who I imagine thought that this was their lucky day. This was a goldmine for them. So all of these conspiracy theories going around over the jury engineering this 5-5 tie, I think we can toss those out the window.
Well, I think there may be some element. If Kellen was thinking, oh, Dom's got this in the bag, I remember when we interviewed Marty Piombo years and years ago, they went into that Nicaragua final tribal council going, okay, of course Fabio is going to win here. And everyone was shocked at how close Chase Rice even came in the votes. They thought he might get like one or two votes. I think Brenda and like Alina or some combination threw him like essentially like pity votes just to make it closer. And it ended up going 5-4. I wonder if one person thought, you know what, I'll throw Wendell a vote. And that ended up causing the tie that caused him to win. Like, yeah, Dom's got this by a wide margin no matter what. I'll throw Wendell. Yeah.
It would have been an even more perfect ending to that season than Fabio winning if the fifth pity vote was the one that tipped it over the line and caused Chase to somehow steal it despite everyone's expectations.
Right. Like, one of the best all-time voting confessionals that totally hooked me into the show when I was 12 or 13 watching Survivor Borneo was the night Jenna Lewis got voted out. Sean, with his alphabet strategy, goes up to the voting booth and goes, I don't think this vote's going to make a difference. You're just the next name in line. I'm just trying to throw this vote away. But the rest of the Toggies knew that by the alphabet, that's where his vote would be going, and they piled their votes on Jenna. I think it would be interesting if someone went up to like Final Tribal Council voting confessional, like, I don't think you're going to win. I don't think this is going to swing it. I just want to throw you a bone, and it ends up actually swinging it. That would be that's one of the first we still have yet to check off the bucket list for before Survivor's all said and done, Dom, is like a topazing almost of the final vote. Yeah, all right. Let's get into another thing from this final six that ended up probably being the major storyline here, and that is Dom with this fake idol that he now wants to put into play and try to convince the rest of the people that he's good through Final Four. He has these two idols. Let's get into how he goes about doing this, because if we also want to look back at things that may have swung the Final Tribal Council vote by one or two that would have potentially cost Dom $1 million, it did seem like this was potentially one spot where he could have done things in a little more of a jury favorable manner potentially. What did you think of the approach?
That's one way of putting it.
I couldn't think of a real word or phrase to use, but yeah, what did you think of this?
So we have this history building now, and I think the first example that comes to mind is Spencer in Cambodia, where these aggressive displays in front of the jury end up really just incinerating jury votes, it looks like. And in Spencer's case, I think he was already drawing dead, and even if there were one or two votes that he lost along the way there, Jeremy already had three or four to spare, so I don't think there was any great loss in the end. But in this case, when we end up with a 5-5 tie, it's inescapable to ask, are these things along the way where one or two jury votes may have been lost, and that ends up deciding, on this razor-thin margin, ends up deciding the entire game? And this seems like it could be. And I think ultimately, Jonathan was going to end up running for Wendell, and so was Kellen. So the people who seemed the most offended by this at Final Tribal, I think, were already solidly in Wendell's corner. But this may have been the thing that tipped them over the edge. And for all of these jury votes which are left unaccounted for, like Chelsea's, for instance, we heard literally nothing from Chelsea in keeping with her personality over the course of the season. We heard nothing from her about her jury vote. And I imagine it's going to stay that way, because I don't think we're going to get a long-form interview with Chelsea, although that might be a fun thing to angle for if everyone else turns us down, just if we can go there instead. But that we know nothing about why she voted the way she did, and it is plausible to me that seeing this very aggressive display from a player who, you know, I think has a reputation of being quite brash and quite forward about things, when Chelsea is not that type of player herself, that might have moved her, if she wasn't already in Wendell's corner, that might have moved her in that direction, and that ultimately could be a $1 million mistake. And for as much as literally anything you do on Survivor nowadays is hailed as, this could be a $1 million mistake, this actually could be. And so it's fun to dissect the angles here and work out exactly who this could have rubbed the wrong way, potentially.
Well, I think there are two kind of conflicting, potentially, narratives going on here. The one being what we're getting into, which is Dominic may have been a little too brash in his gambit here, I guess, in making sure people didn't put votes on him. The other thing, though, that I thought was interesting and that's been a talking point, and I'm curious to hear how you would kind of circle this square between these two concepts, potentially, and now seems like as good a time as any to get into it because I didn't write it down for later and we'll probably forget, which is the early jurors all voted for Dom and the late jurors all voted for Wendell. If it was anything that Dom could have done differently, like, what goes into that for you? Like, is that a coincidence, or is it just how do you square the idea that Dom could have done something differently, but also it was just a matter of when people got voted out?
So firstly, I'm pretty sure it's squaring the circle, not circling the square.
Sorry,
although
fair enough. I don't know. I just hear you say things and I try to mimic them weeks later.
So who knows what the etiology of that really is. But to go back to what I'm pretty sure your actual question was, yeah, that is one of the most puzzling things, and it's so unlikely for it to happen by chance that it feels like it can't be by chance, but I'm not sure what the rationale is meant to be. I don't know what cause you're assigning any of that.
But that's what I'm saying, is I don't know that it's necessarily by chance either, but at the same time, I don't feel like we can say, I don't feel like we can read anything meaningful into that while also saying Dominic missed this great opportunity to play this better.
So just going down the line there, I think Chris Noble was always going to be a vote for Dom. It's game respects game, or person who thinks he has game respecting game. And then Michael, we saw, was maybe Dom's biggest advocate in the entire cast at Final Tribal there. And I guess Libby was just going along with him, maybe Jenna too. That was a block of votes in Dom's corner. And then when you move over that line, you have Chelsea to start with, who we saw that scene which you highlighted and I think a lot of people enjoyed on her way out, when she had that little thing with Wendell at Tribal of, like, good game, sir, good game, lady, or whatever the exact phrasing was. I wonder if she was already disposed to like Wendell more or be a receptive vote for Wendell if he was willing to put the work in to get it. And then Kellen, I think, was a lean Wendell who became a strongly lean, maybe a lock for Wendell after that display from Dom. Then Donovan, I think, was going for Wendell or Laurel. It was kind of surprising to a lot of people, I think, that he didn't throw Laurel a vote. And if it was 5-4-1, maybe Donovan is the person who now has to answer for deciding the entire course of the season. Then Sebastian, it was in Wendell's corner, and then Angela as well. All of those votes make sense to me in their own right. But is there some larger narrative that you think explains them or why Dom wasn't able to pick up the crucial sixth vote that he needed?
I don't know what the reason would be, but I do think there is something to it, that the people who were really involved at the core of a lot of the Navidi strong decisions felt like Wendell was the person they wanted to reward, and the people who, as far as I could tell, more were just kind of observers of this season who drew bad situations or in like Chris Noble's case, played poorly. They seemed to all be on Dominic. And so I don't know if which of these is a coincidence. If it's if that part is the coincidence, that it's split that way, which I would be inclined to guess no, or if we are just kind of being unfair to Dom in expecting that he would have had a better chance, like a much better chance than I think he realistically did at some of those later jurors.
I don't know if it makes sense to count Chris Noble as a Navidi, but the first core Navidi member in Dez was also the first one to really stray from that and who made the more aggressive move against their own alliance, and she ended up voting for Dom and seeming very content with that and not seriously entertaining the thought of voting for Wendell. So that might just be a case of their play styles syncing up, where like Dom was able to play the game that Dom was Dom was able to play the game that she was trying to play, and that was the game that lined up with what she wanted to see. So that's what she voted for.
While Desiree has come up, I thought one really interesting thing I heard, I don't remember where it was, but I heard Dom talk about how he was, I think he said he was like surprised to get both Chris Noble and Desiree. Like he didn't think he had much of a chance when she was talking about all the bonding she'd done with Wendell arguing about Chicago rappers. And it actually crossed my mind, if instead of picking an urn, Dom had gotten the remove a juror power that wasn't cursed necessarily, but could have at least theoretically been interesting, it wouldn't have shocked me if he removed the wrong person and then cost himself a fight. Like if he had picked the right person, he would have won 5-4, but he picks Chris Noble or Dez to remove and it costs him the game 5-4.
It would definitely be cursed after that. It would be a shoo-in for Ghost Island 2 when that comes 5 years down the pipeline. But yeah, that would have been really interesting to see. I don't know if he would have removed them or like if he's picking up on what Kellen's putting down through her expressions at all of these tribals. Maybe he goes for her. Maybe there's someone else involved. But I would be very curious to hear from Dom exactly which votes he thought he had either locked in or which ones he thought were getting away from him and how that lined up with how it actually came down. But then there is something to, I think, what Steven was saying in his immediate commentary after the finale, that the people who spent more time with them as a group all broke for Wendell. And you can question how much of that is just a matter of degrees. So when you get down to the end game, someone's getting voted out every single day. So is there a big difference between day 34 and day 38 ultimately? Probably not, right? But if Wendell's strength is that he was playing this more subtle, more social game, the people who spent more time with him are the ones more likely to see that and appreciate that and just enjoy him as a person, having spent more time with him.
Yeah, I don't know what was going on between like Dom and Wendell. Like obviously they had final three plans with Laurel and Donathan, like hoped to work closely with that group until Donathan started freaking out. But I wonder what they were saying to the Kellens and Desirees of Chelsea's of the world as they were trying to get them to keep picking off like Michael and Libby, and I wonder what promises were being made to that kind of like more core Navidi group. And if perhaps they were more upset with Dominic for promising them the world potentially, which we didn't see too much of on TV, than they were of Wendell, if that is something that happened. Because it seems like something must have been keeping them in line. Like they must have felt reasonably good about those two guys for some reason.
As I understand it, Kellen thought that that core Navidi group was herself, Dom, and Wendell, and that went back a fair way. So even after Dom blindsided Bradley, she was able to stick to that. And when she decided to stray from that and finally make a move, it was too late. And it was Wendell playing Laurel and Kellen against each other, which kept the two of them from teaming up in what would have needed to happen for them to make a move against the two of them. So she credits him with that being the biggest move of the game, because from her perspective, like that was the thing that kept all of the ducks in line. That was what kept this revolt from happening against the two of them. So as she sees it, like if anything, she was bitter against Wendell because he was the one who kind of led her on this wild goose chase and then ended up running her out. And it was her appreciating that move that he made against her that was allowed her to come around and finally give him the credit that he deserved. So the way that she tells it, she's not being bitter against Dom. She's in fact giving the credit to Wendell that he would deserve and overcoming her own bitterness against him.
Okay, that totally makes sense as well. Perhaps it's not bitterness against Dom, it's credit to Wendell. But for whatever, I would imagine that based on the way these jury votes have fallen, I don't think it can fairly be argued that Wendell did not do a better job than Dom with like that core group of people who really got them to the point where they were in such a crushing position in the end game. So I certainly don't have like an issue with seeing Wendell rewarded by only the most recent people. Like if we want to think back, these juries didn't used to start with 10 people, you know, at the final 13 or whatever. If this had been a 7-person jury like the old days, Wendell would have crushed him.
Yeah, I think that's a very important observation. It's also worth noting too that if Wendell was actually closer inside the game with all of these endgamers, so Chelsea and Kellen and Sebastian and Donathan and Angela, then maybe he was playing a much more dominant game than anyone, even his biggest fans, were actually giving him credit for at the time. Because if he was part of the dominant duo that was running the game and that everything was revolving around, but he was also closer individually with literally everybody except for Dom, So if all of that is true, then Wendell starts to look like Earl or any of these players who historically we have given so much credit for being the center of the wheel that all the spokes are coming out of and who really had a lot more control than it might look like from TV, where they're trying to add suspense to it and keep it looking like it could go any other way.
Yeah, sure. Let's get into let's close out on this final six by talking about the move that Dom makes and the way he does this. We talked about like the jury implications and perhaps they weren't thrilled with his demeanor during this whole process. But to just kind of get into it in a little more detail, Dom has this fake idol, the David Wright idol, that he's convincing the whole group is real. And not only, Dom, is this a real idol, it's so real. Jeff, I don't even need to wait for the appropriate time to play it. I'm going to come give it to you now. And this is something we as the audience saw last season happen with Ben at Dreeburg and one of his miraculous idols that he got. And in that instance, what happened on the spot is, even though no votes had been cast, there was still plenty of discussion to be had, Jeff immediately says, okay, Ben, this is a real idol. And he's not committed to playing it, but Jeff does on the spot validate for Ben, this is real. And when we get Dominic go up to Jeff and give him this fake idol, Jeff, I don't expect Jeff to ever blow up his spot, of course, but he doesn't say, obviously, this is fake. So I would think, like, a big major takeaway that any people applying to Survivor who think that anyone in casting, any future player, now that all of this kind of nonsense is in play, has to be on the same page here and has to clarify with production or Jeff or anyone before the season starts. Because if we use this as the precedent, Jeff will immediately let you know whether an idol is real or not. And I wouldn't be floored at all if going forward they recognize that that is not the plan and that it should not be that way. And it wouldn't shock me at all if they tell all future players, Jeff is not going to confirm or deny the validity of any idol until the votes have been cast and it is committed to being used. But if you are a future player, you must know this ruling before you go to a single tribal council.
Yeah, this cast went out, I believe, after Game Changers had just finished airing. So with this part of the cycle, season 35 hadn't aired yet. They didn't know that Ben was going to set this precedent, which had it aired at that point, I don't think Dom would be able to get away with this in quite the same fashion. But the way it played out, Dom ends up like reversing that precedent or like embellishing it at the same time. I'm not quite sure what this is going to mean, but the upshot of all of this for him is that he gets to kind of play this fake idol in advance without anyone being able to call his bluff in real time. Although it would have been fun to see if someone had asked hopefully with the Tony voice, as they asked him, can you validate this for me? Like, can you confirm whether that is or is not a real idol, and just see what Jeff's reaction is? Because even if Jeff says no, the way that Jeff does it might actually give you some information as to whether it's valid or not.
Right, this is what I'm saying, is if you have seen both season 35 and 36 now, if they are going to be consistent, you will know as soon as someone hands an idol to Jeff in advance. If they're going to be consistent, Jeff will call it out immediately that that's a real idol, the same way he did for Ben. Now, I don't see them being consistent. I think Ben, shockingly, got special treatment to make him seem as unappealing of a target as possible for that night. And they will, of course, change the rule to what it always should have been. If you would like to hear me yell about this, go listen to that podcast we did after Ben played his idol, or go listen to the podcast we did at the Cagayan merge, where I said when Tony went and got his idol validated before playing it, which I also thought was special treatment and called it as such in the moment, the ruling 1,000,000%. Jeff should have known this before anyone tried to give him anything up front, before anything tried to get validated. The obvious answer is, guys, this is not the time to play hidden immunity idols. The time to play hidden immunity
hold
idols.
Hold up. Look, there is a categorical difference between what Tony did and what Ben did. Tony was about to play his idol in the window of the game where you're meant to be able to do that and to ask for validation. And so Tony was setting a new precedent, sure, but that's fine. That's within the realms of what you expect and within the rules as they were set out at the time. What Ben did was explicitly denied in what Jeff says about being able to play idols and when you're meant to play them. So I don't mind the rule changing. I mind the fact that Ben was able to change the rule by himself, effectively, with all the other stuff that was going on around that and all of the questions that I think many of us still have. And then with what Dom was doing here, he's basically, he's not pushing the rules of the game, but he's daring Jeff to call his bluff. Because when he just leaves it there for safekeeping and doesn't receive any response from Jeff, he's meant to... He's like relying on the ambiguity that puts into the game over whether that's real or not. And if Jeff... If the best practice is for Jeff to immediately deny that that's an idol, then there's no way he can do that. So in a way, he is playing with the rules a bit, but in a way which is creative enough and understanding enough of what the rule is trying to do that no one's really going to care about it.
Right. Dom is taking advantage of what the rules obviously always should have been, which is idols will not be validated or invalidated until it is time to commit to playing them. You're right that Tony did do his validation in the normal window of if you have an idol, now would be the time to play it. But what I hated Jeff doing was validating the idol for Tony before he committed to playing it, because certainly you don't think this is within Tony's range to get it validated and then keep it and now make sure everyone knows this is real. And actually, with that in mind, one interesting thing I thought of that may have played a role in this is Dom gets up after all of the votes have been cast and goes to explain to Jeff what just went down. And I was wondering if he was doing this not because he wanted to go like rub it in, but he was trying to get a read on, do I need to pull out my real idol and play it tonight? And he gets up there and we see, at least on TV, we see Sebastian starts shaking his head in frustration after he finds out that this idol was fake. And I'm guessing it at least crossed Dom's mind that if I go up here and get that bad vibes, I'm still willing to pull this real idol out. And I think that's crucial to go up there and try to get a read.
So that's an angle that I hadn't thought about, because we've seen Dom offer what they're looking for in terms of narration when he's making these moves and pulling all of these theatrics. I wonder if they're being pressured into doing that, because we have these, I saw them described as like these mini book reports on various seasons when someone gets up to play whatever their advantage is. And I wonder if someone goes up and says, so someone used this idol at some point, I forget the details, but it doesn't matter, I'm playing this myself. Would they back up and force them to actually give the description? Because if that's just a standard part of the procedure now, then Dom can almost use that to his advantage even further, because that's what he's expected to do. And so it doesn't seem like he's trying to get a read on you or trying to weaponize us even further or make a big move, because that's just what he has to do. That's how you have to do it.
Interesting. Yeah. That definitely could be in play as well. And actually, that may have been a good way to get people like sketched out by you, is to try to go up and offer no information. Like if you were trying to make them think it was fake for whatever reason, is to go up and just try to play it as quickly as possible without giving the book report. And actually, something that you brought up that I wanted to make a point about earlier, along similar lines of Dom and just his willingness to get up and give Jeff the idol ahead of time. I would be floored if he did that, if he showed up to that tribal council without telling the producers, this is what I'm going to do. And I just want to be clear, Jeff's not going to blow this up on me, right? Like, I don't think he would ever even consider taking that kind of shot if he wasn't positive it would not be immediately blown up.
So that makes me wonder now if there's some weird like double leveling play where you can force Jeff to blow up your spot, because that's not what you ever intended to do in the first place, and now that sets up your real objective, whatever that is.
Objective? Like that's your Jeff-centric objective?
No,
okay, all right.
We're not even going to work on that. We're just going to already on the cutting room floor there.
Okay, good. So yeah, this was a really exciting event, though. What did you think of Dom overall and just this idol that does nothing and how he played it?
So I liked it, but as we've seen, he has to walk a very careful line between putting enough force and effort into it that it has the desired effect of scaring people off and making this move on him, and also not rubbing so many potential jurors or already jurors the wrong way and maybe torching some crucial jury votes in the process. So I'm going to be interested to see if it did actually move the needle in terms of who voted for him or didn't vote for him, because if it's just one of many factors that piled up and weighed on that eventual decision, then it's quite hard to disentangle that. But if that was what actually prompted Sebastian to change his vote or someone else to change their vote, then that is what you look back on as something that could have been done differently and maybe changes the entire game if it does.
Right, I think the idol that does nothing and Dominic's whole performance there was probably a lot different for the audience watching than for all of the other people and jurors watching who did not know that the idol was fake and didn't understand why all of this kind of bravado had to be going into this. I think it probably it was not received in the spirit in which it was intended. But at the end of the day, with this fake idol, I am so thrilled with how Dominic ended up playing it, to see it just have any kind of major effect, not just like some minor meaningful effect, but to have this big of an effect, I think is virtually close to the best case scenario. And I was listening, this was... That for anyone unfamiliar, this is a twist that an idea that I submitted to the 2014 Survivor think tank, and Steven in that podcast summarized the upside really well, and it's almost scary. I went and listened back to that. It's like 10 minutes into that episode, and he almost like laid out exactly all of the great upside that a device like that this could have within the games if it were to fall into the right hands. And I truly feel like Dominic, short of like Tony Vlachos, Dominic might be my number two all-time draft pick to have the idol that does nothing, like this kind of super creative, aggressive player. Well, the reason back in 2014 that this was an idea that I had was this was right after Tony and his Tyler Perry idol in Cagayan, where the advantage was not only this is a ludicrously overpowered idol in the sense that it is able to be played after the votes, but furthermore, no one else in the game even knows what this does, which is yet another preposterous advantage. They have to just believe whatever you say. And wouldn't it be great if there was still that disparity of information without the just obscene overpoweredness of the idol, and the idol that does nothing, but you can tell people that it does whatever the hell you want it to do, I think is a really good balance. And I think that kind of information disparity is hopefully something we're going to be seeing in the show going forward. And I'm so grateful that Dom ended up playing this to such a big effect, and really, I hope, make the show more comfortable with these kinds of advantages in the future. All right, so there we go with the idol that does nothing. Dom, we are going to be losing Seabass here, and I thought this was interesting, too. On his way out, in his parting words, here's a direct quote from Sebastian. He says, quote, "I am so stupid. Dom is such a good actor. He made me keep my extra vote in my pocket. I think I just made a million-dollar mistake. Good job, buddy." End quote. Obviously, a couple nights later now, Dom, we're going to show up to Final Tribal Council, and Sebastian's going to have some bones to pick here with our friend Dominic. What do we know anything about what went down here to change his mind, or did you get a different read that he seemed to come away with that impressed with Dominic and potentially willing to vote for him?
So I don't know if it is Dom being such a good actor or Sebastian just being illiterate and not understanding how his own advantage works, but I'm unclear how much credit you can assign there. But the sense that I got is the reaction overwhelmingly to his jury question was, oh, Seabass is this bit of baby who got outplayed by Dom and doesn't want to reward him for that. But my understanding was Seabass was always going to be in Wendell's corner. And we saw those moments with like the seashell that Wendell gave. And apparently the two of them were quite tight early on. And it was Dom and his general vibe of that kind of more forward aggression that didn't really mesh well with Sebastian just being this like chill, laid back surfer guy, whereas Wendell was able to be the bridge between the two of them, just like he was between almost any other pair of Navitis left in the game at that point. So I think he was always in Wendell's corner, and even if Dom had put on an absolute clinic in terms of appealing to the jury, I don't think Sebastian was going to be swayed. I think he was always going to vote for who he likes more, and that's Wendell, and nothing was going to change his mind.
Well, we will move on now to our final five. It is a water obstacle course immunity challenge, followed by the Sarah Channon Memorial Pyramid Puzzle. Double the number of pieces that Sarah brings to all the know-it-alls, but still quite fun to see that finally make it onto the show. Wendell wins this immunity necklace, and it was truly hysterical. After Wendell wins the immunity, they're about to go to a commercial break, and it cuts to Wendell giving a confessional about how, you know, tonight might finally be the night to turn on Dominic, which obviously he knows and we as the audience know makes zero sense. We all know Dom has an idol he's about to play tonight. And so I thought that was funny. They just like, that's how badly they don't want you tuning out during the commercial breaks, is they will put forward a scenario that every single person in the game and watching knows is not going to happen if they apply like even the most basic of thought. But here we go.
Well, hold up. So I think what they were going for there was, firstly, to set up this contrast in personalities and playstyles, where Wendell says, Dom may be loud and boisterous, but this is my move and my chance to outsmart him in front of the jury, essentially beating him at his own game. And then also the move that they're trying to lay the ground for there is him playing the idol on Laurel and knowing that she's going to be the ultimate deciding vote of the entire season by herself. I think this is meant to, for the viewers who were not paying attention to their relationship over the course of the season, offer some basic reason for why that might be the case. So those people can come away thinking, Wendell's a genius. He played his idol for her and she ended up picking him to win the entire thing. Well, that was his big move.
Merely saying, like, this confessional literally is suggesting, stay tuned, it's time to vote out Dom, when everyone should know that that's not going to happen. But you're right. And let's get into Wendell and that idol that he ends up playing on Laurel, because now that these idols are expiring, Wendell has the immunity necklace. Dom has his own idol. What is this, the Andrea idol that Dom ends up playing here to get through this round? And then I thought it was funny, as they're like getting set to go and play their idols when it's the time, Wendell says, you go first. And Dom's like, oh, what, you got some big finale planned? Like, I thought that was so great. And for him to be correct, that he essentially did have a finale planned.
Yeah, I've loved the back and forth between the two of them the whole season. That's because we've had these pairs who are like they're effective in the game together, but personality wise they don't seem to gel that much. So I'm thinking like Todd and Amanda, let's say. Mm-hmm. That might just be Amanda being this kind of void who doesn't really offer much in that sense, but regardless, I just love the banter between the two of them and this understanding. And we saw this later on as well, when as soon as Dom wins that final challenge, Wendell, he knows he's making fire. He doesn't even pretend to make some kind of fake deal or whatever. He knows what the deal is, and they're able to just talk about that openly and still with good humor.
Right. I love it. I think like that to me is the future of Survivor, like is casting people who are able to think in those kind of obvious, clear game terms and acknowledge the reality of the season as it's playing out around them. And in spots where there is room to play, be very willing to play. But in spots where it's a foregone conclusion, not be bullshitting the other person. Like, I think part of the reason that Dom and Wendell were able to work so well all season long, we didn't see any of this on the show to speak of, but we've heard a bunch about it in exit press, is they were both constantly asking each other, are we going to kill each other yet, or are we going to stick around for a little while and work together? And I really think never trying to suggest to the other one, oh, I'm so loyal, I'm going to take you to the end, when they obviously know that that's not going to happen, is what really was able to keep them so strong together for so long, I would say. Like, them both understanding, we are going to be great if we work together for the time being, but we also recognize we can't go to the end together, and that's going to keep them honest with each other.
I think you also need your fair share of players who are sloppy and messy and dramatic as well. But those who can exist, can coexist in harmony, I think. And you can,
what you don't
you can get
need
a good mix
is
on both
Keith
seasons.
Nail. Sorry, Dom. What you don't need is Keith Nail at Final Five with an idol that does nothing, saying, I don't even want it. That's what you do not need on Survivor.
And what I don't want on this podcast is your continued vendetta against Keith Nail 3 years later, who somehow hasn't died yet.
All right. Well, what did you think of Wendell and his speech that he gives about as he goes to save Laurel? He says, this might not be a smart strategic move, but I appreciate all you've done for me and for our alliance. I thought it was perhaps some subliminal messaging from Wendell to Laurel if she perhaps finds herself in a similar situation the following round, deciding who to bring with her. What did you think of how Wendell went about this move of, I have this extra idol and I want to save Laurel?
To me, it's emblematic of why I was so slow to jump on the Wendell bandwagon. So preseason, I didn't really see what everyone else saw in him. And then in that first episode, I know there was a scene that we had this pretty contentious disagreement about, where I think it was he was trying to talk Sebastian out of targeting Dom after Dom raised his hand at the that first challenge and challenged Chris Noble. And your take on it was, yeah, Wendell's handling this perfectly. He knows exactly what to say and how to say. He's got this finesse in the way he talks to people. And I thought, he's just coming across as kind of flippant to me. And if it was anyone other than Sebastian, whose head is off in the clouds, I don't know if they would react to it in the same way that he did. And yet, it seemed to work on Sebastian. It seemed to work on everyone else. And socially, it seemed like Wendell was crushing it constantly out there. And this might be another example of that, where he gives a speech, which to me comes across as just so transparent and inauthentic, and especially someone like Laurel should be able to see right through it. And I think to some extent she did, and yet there was also this sincere emotion there that she picked up on, and that I think the jury picked up on, and which they and she did really appreciate. So I don't know how to square my initial impression with the evidence that the people who are out there playing with him seem to see in that. So I think the takeaway is I'm wrong and I need to discover that for myself and come around, but I'm still not quite there yet.
Well, yeah, I would not describe Wendell's speech about how he views Laurel exactly like his sister back home and the loyalty to that is worth a ton to him. That did not seem forced and inauthentic to me. It definitely did seem like he was reflecting upon a truly genuine bond that he'd really enjoyed developing over the last 37 days at this point, I guess. But I do think you are right that there was certainly an element of he wouldn't be putting this kind of polish on it if there wasn't a jury present. He wouldn't be, taking it up this level of almost performative.
I think that's what I didn't really get with this in particular, because Wendell is the type who doesn't have to perform. And whenever he's talking to you, it feels so natural and he's just kind of laid back and saying his thing. And that's what gives it its authenticity. And so when you have now in this open forum, he's making this big display with this clear strategic goal in mind, it's so jarring compared to just how he normally is that it stands out more than if it's Dom, who you know is this loud character who's always putting on some kind of show.
Right, right. Yeah, like, if we were playing on a season of Survivor and I went there and did, like, that final six fake immunity idol thing, I don't think anyone would be surprised. It would probably be even more poorly received than when Dom did. But if you, Dominic, did that kind of thing, people would be jumping out of their chair because you don't go out of your way to say one word, let alone put on this giant show ever. All right, so there we go. We have Wendell gives the immunity necklace to Laurel. Dom plays his idol. Wendell gives the Eric Reichenbach necklace to Laurel. He keeps his own immunity necklace. Dom has the Andrea necklace. And of course, Dominic, Donathan has been locked into this fire challenge ever since episode one, we decided. So this is going to be the end of the game for Angela here. Check that. Apparently, that my decreeing that Donathan is for sure there at Final Four does not, in fact, just put him there. He, and some of the back talk, I guess, that he has been putting out there into the universe these last few rounds about trying to potentially flip on Dom and Wendell has not been overly well received. And actually, Donathan here is going to be the one who leaves at Final Five. Where are you on Donathan going out at Final Five and ruining my dreams of being in the fire challenge?
Well, I love that, obviously. I guess Kellen was the first victim of this idea that you wanting it to be true doesn't necessarily make it true. But
Stephanie Johnson probably was the first victim of it.
No, that's true. And not even at the reunion. So she couldn't show her face after you doomed her like that. But I think Donathan going out here does make sense, and he seems like someone who, if he snuck into the end, could actually put up a good case for himself, because he has this amazing story. And even if he wasn't respected in the game up until this point, being the only one to publicly break from Dom and Wendell, I think, earns you so many brownie points in the eyes of the jury. Even if you never end up following through, even if you don't vote against them, if you can't get anything together, just being willing to say that out in the open, in front of them and in front of the jury, I think just vaults you up in their estimation so strongly that you now become the next biggest threat, even if you weren't before.
Right, we think about perennially popular people like Troizen, who have fit that mold before, of super popular because they're coming after the power players. But no, I totally know what you're saying.
Would you say perennials versus Gen X? Is there anything you can work with that?
All right. Yes, I would. That's strong. That's a good one. I thought it was interesting that Donathan, after leaving the game, Sebastian does not get this treatment. Angela will not go on to get this treatment. But Donathan does get brought out with Jeff to talk in the studio in L.A. And Jeff tells him about Sia being a big fan of Survivor. And you could see the excitement coming on Donathan's face. It's not $50,000, which she gave to Ty. But Sia's still giving $10,000 to Donathan. Certainly not bad. And as you mentioned, Dom, I think he did do a great job making a name for himself over the course of this season. And particularly in the end game, being the person unwilling to just sit there and take it from Dom and Wendell. So I bring you... that brings us to this question, Dom, which is Donathan coming back for a second chance on Survivor?
I think so. If you force me to make a choice, I would say yes, but I wonder how much of his story is the novelty of just going out there and having that experience for the first time. And if he comes back, what's his new story? He's already been through that before. He's now more wise and worldly, which I guess could be like the second part of his arc. But you would have to find some new hook to keep people interested in Donathan, because hey, he's a fun character in his own right, and he certainly makes an impression on the screen. But when you lose the thing that really makes him Donathan in terms of Survivor, then you have to go somewhere else with that.
Well, I think Donathan and just kind of his general fish out of water story would still be applicable even as a returnee, as somebody that, like, he doesn't strike me as someone who's dying to go out camping every weekend and dying to, you know, interact socially with all people from all different walks of life. But he does seem like someone who loves Survivor and is out there who would try really hard at Survivor. And frankly, I think Donathan will be back. And I'm really looking forward to Donathan being back. What we always hear about is play your first time like it's your second time. And I think out of the people not named Dom and Wendell, I would say Donathan was probably the person who did the best job at that on their first time. So I'm all about having this guy back.
I think he would definitely be this active and enthusiastic player, but in terms of how his story was fed to us as the audience, I think his edit would be a lot more cursed. It would be so much more focused on the game itself and less about who he is and as a person and how he's connecting with everyone else out there and what the game means to him.
How old is Donathan? Is he like 26, 27, 25 in that range?
I want to say 26, but I could be wrong on that.
Okay, well, my early call is when Michael Yerger comes back, and even if the difference is he was 18 and now he's 25, Michael Yerger will look more like he did his first time than Donathan will. Like, even if Donathan comes back in 2 years, I feel like our takeaway from seeing Donathan on day one is, oh my God, he looks so much older and so different. I feel like he's going to have a different haircut, the same way Ozzy showed up to Fans versus Favorites with a different haircut. I'm already counting on Donathan being back and very much enjoying that. So there goes Donathan, and we will move on now to Final Four, right down to it. And we don't have a vote this round. What we do have is an immunity challenge followed by a fire challenge. And our immunity challenge is, if not exactly identical to the final immunity for Millennials versus Gen X, it's certainly very similar, where they're stacking balls and stands on top of each other while balancing on some sort of wobbly plank. The winner in this case is not only going to get immunity, but unlike in Millennials versus Gen X, will also get to pick someone to bring with them to the finals. And Dominic ends up winning this immunity necklace, and famously, or, you know, notoriously, I guess, whatever the word is, he is now in all of his post-game press talking about how he wishes he had not done that. Should he regret this?
I don't think so. Unless you really think you're going to struggle to beat Wendell in the finals, and again, we don't know what his expectations were for that or what Wendell's expectations were for that, so it's hard to say. Somebody ran the numbers on this, so they varied the win percentage that you give Dom in that fire challenge. And so based on how you vary that, what's a tipping point where it makes sense for him to step into the ring and try and take Wendell out himself? And what they found, I think, was you need Dom to be very likely to win that fire challenge for this to make any sense at all, even if you think it's going to be a tough matchup for you if Wendell does sneak into the finals. But I think in this case, it's more of a psychological regret than a mathematical one. So even if the right statistical choice or whatever is to leave it in the hands of Laurel or Angela, it's going to be so tempting to take matters into your own hands and try to go in there yourself and beat him and earn your spot there and lock up the win on day 38 instead of day 39. Because you've seen 36 seasons of Survivor, you know that the jury is prone to follow their own whims, and it's very hard to predict or control what they're going to do, despite what people say nowadays about jury management, as if anyone who lost a jury vote at any point, that was completely their own fault, and if only they hadn't made such a terrible mistake along the way, that vote was always up for grabs.
Well, so this to me comes down to a few different factors, and the first is the most important, which is, we haven't seen Jeff ask anyone this for a long time at this point, but I would imagine you were still at least technically allowed to give away the immunity necklace. And if assuming that is the case, you never, ever, ever throw this challenge, because then you're just letting Wendell have an even better chance of winning the necklace himself. You still have to compete as hard as you can in this challenge. But there is certainly a tipping point where if you think Wendell is virtually 100% in fire against either Laurel or Angela, and that you would be as well, that you want to win the necklace and give it to one of them so that they take the other one and you have to beat Wendell in fire. And the way that, like, to me, that is purely just a simple math problem of, if both of us are 100% to beat the two women in fire and both of us are 100% to beat the two women in a jury vote, this decision completely comes down to your chances of when facing against Wendell in fire versus your chances against Wendell in a jury vote. If you think you are basically 50-50 at fire, but a a 75-25 underdog with the jury, you have to give that necklace away because you're going to win the game 50% of the time through the fire path and 25% of the time through the jury path.
It's like
roughly.
You're introducing this completely new choice into the equation now where it's, instead of having a jury vote, you may as well, if Dom goes and faces Wendell and Dom wins, you can cancel the jury vote. You don't need to stick around for that.
Right.
You're essentially negating that entire element of the game and presenting Dom with a choice of, do you want to face a jury or do you want to face Wendell in fire? I guess you would call that a physical challenge, even if it's maybe not what you expect from a traditional Survivor challenge. So that's a choice which it's so hard to actually weigh up the probabilities for, because even if you have a solid read on your own fire-making abilities versus Wendell's, which is hard enough to come up with as it stands already, you might not have a good read socially on the jury and how they're going to vote. So you need to have a solid handle on both of those probabilities to actually make this decision. And that is so hard to do. And it wouldn't surprise me if right. Dom is above average in both of those departments, he still ends up making the statistically wrong call, because how are you even meant to know what the actual chances are?
Right. What you want to avoid is Dom gives up the necklace, goes to play fire against Wendell, loses, and then it turns out he would have beaten Wendell. If he would have beaten anyone,
because
if he just stayed in
the
finals.
You are lighting six figures worth of equity on fire there and then by not keeping the necklace. And
Not six figures, nearly seven. You're lighting 900,000 on fire by doing that.
Yeah, I mean, depending on what the chance of you beating him in that challenge is. But yeah, it is... It is catastrophically bad to give it up and be wrong, whereas it doesn't feel as bad to let Angela face Wendell, Wendell beats her and then wins the game, because at least you feel like, well, that's the jury's call and maybe Angela could have won and said, that decision feels like it's been taken out of your hands, it's removed from you. Whereas, you know, even if it's not what you should go down as, if you give up the necklace and you lose, regardless of whether you would have beat Wendell or not, the popular reception will be, you are the dumbest player of all time. You will inherit that mantle from Eric and James, who we saw in a cameo appearance at the reunion show. You will become the newest holder of that title. And I would say you should become that if you would have beat Wendell and you give it up and then you lose to him. Because maybe that's results-oriented in a different way, but that's almost equally as bad.
Right, it's the $900,000 equity hit is when you win immunity and would beat Wendell anyway. But in this scenario where, like, if we want to look at what played out and just count, I don't think it was the case that every juror was rock solid and maybe Dom could have done something to swing someone over and still beat Wendell in the finals. But if we want to look at this and just say, for the sake of argument, Dom was 0% to beat Wendell in the finals. If we are also still factoring in Wendell will beat whichever of Laurel or Angela he goes to fire against and then will beat me in the finals once he makes it there, Dom is completely correct in saying winning this challenge was the wrong thing to do. The number one thing is win it and give away the necklace. But if that's not an option, you have to throw the challenge. If you can't beat Wendell in a jury vote and he's definitely going to win a fire challenge against anyone else, you need to go take that shot. That's the only chance you have at winning the game.
So coming at it from the completely opposite direction now, if you think that Wendell is going to beat whichever of the women he faces in fire, is there an argument for taking Wendell and just removing that ability for him to prove himself once again in front of the jury?
If you make it clear in those terms, like, I don't want to give this guy a heroic day 38 as the jury's on their way out for their final deliberations before final tribal council, I think there is something to that. And I think I tweeted something along those lines during the finale of maybe taking Wendell, if you know he's going to win the fire challenge anyway, is the right idea to remove that moment from his resume. But again, it goes back to the idea of, at least I'm opening the door for something weird to happen by not doing this.
And also, if you take Wendell, you open up the Tina versus Colby argument of he was able to convince me to take him, and therefore he's the better player, regardless of any other factors that come into play now.
That's why I said you have to preface it. But before doing it, you have to make it clear, I'm taking him because I know he's going to get there anyway, and I need it to be in the least meaningful way possible.
But the thing is, you can't, like, lecture the jury that because he got there in a certain way, therefore it's less legitimate. You need them to figure that out for themselves, and you can't rely on them doing that. So in a way, it's almost better if Dom doesn't win and Wendell doesn't win either. So that decision is kind of taken out of their hands. But Dom would prefer if he just got parachuted into the final three without having to win or without having to make any other choice and just let the chips fall where they may in regards to Wendell.
Yeah. Well, what do you think about like this fire challenge now going forward? At least for me, my initial projection was that this may be one of the last times we ever see it. As it turns out, this fire challenge for the second season in a row gets them the result I think they would be dying to have. So I don't. At this juncture, I certainly don't see the Final Four fire challenge going anywhere anytime soon until it produces a result that they don't like, which I think it is still very liable to do. And if we get that a couple seasons in a row, I think it still will go away. But are you on board that this will continue to be the new Day 38 function in Survivor?
Absolutely. Yeah. And the one advantage that even the opponents of this twist would identify is that you get a Clash of the Titans in the finals more often now, where one player wins immunity or can convince someone else to take them, the other one also wins their way there, and then that now has to be resolved in front of the jury instead of one of them gets rid of out of Final Four and then the final three is a complete anticlimax. I wonder what you think the negative outcome is that would make them reverse course. So is it something like you have this dominant player who they want to win the game, and then at Final Four, like a Brett from Samoa is able to just have that backdoor out into the finals and they get there and that ruins everything? Or how do you see that playing out?
Right. That is exactly right. Is the two obvious goats, one of them wins the immunity and one of them takes the other one, and then the Brett Clouser figure ends up taking out the powerhouse that would have won the season under any kind of normal circumstances. And the same way, by the way, let us not forget, like, to go, this kind of ties back into talking about Dom now probably going to be historically misremembered the same way Steven is, of like, why would you sit next to that guy in the end? Like, I think it's worth noting that Dom wins this season probably unanimously if this is season 33 instead of season 36. It's 100% timing that cost him this season. He played a game that would have won him the first 34 seasons of Survivor.
I think that's the one hypothetical I'm most excited to dive into here, because it strikes me that both Dom and Wendell come out of the season looking so much different. Just if you freeze the game and everything up until day 38 is exactly the same, and you just change the format of the Final Four, you go back a year and a half in time, and the entire outcome and the entire reception of the season is completely different. Do you think, though, that we can make that assumption? Can we assume that the Final Four twist and knowing about it in advance had no effect on the gameplay, or do you think something happens a few rounds ago that then percolates and everything else is different after that?
I would suspect it had very little impact on the gameplay, because I would imagine if it did have an impact on the gameplay, it would be, we need to get Dom and Wendell, the fire guys, out of here a lot sooner. And it didn't seem like that was anyone's, like, at least on TV, that really became a factor for anyone, including those two guys.
We're assuming here that Dom is a fire guy. Can we back that up at all?
He said he was. Like, he's thinking about giving the necklace away to go compete with Wendell in the fire.
Dom would never lie in Survivor to achieve an objective, so I think we can just take that at face value.
I do think Dom... I feel like Laurel even said Dom and Wendell are the ones who are always making the fires.
Sure, and I can believe that. I just didn't know if there was anything to really substantiate it, but... yeah, because people speculate that the Final Four twist has the effect, maybe the unintended effect, of calcifying the gameplay, where when you know that you have a spot in the Final Four, you have two chances to get your way to the Final Three, even if you don't feel great about the other three people that you expect to be there with, you at least have a decent shot of making it no matter what. Especially as, let's say, you have what you think is a good Final Four deal. Let's say that the best person in challenges is going to win that final immunity. They're likely to be the best player in Fire too, so... The strongest competitor in round one is taken out of play for round two, and now you get to play in round two, even if you don't get taken yourself. So it's much easier to convince yourself that you're not going to be just on the receiving end of a 3-1 vote. So the same way that the final three made three-person alliances much more sustainable, I think the final four twist now might have four-person alliances be that much more sustainable too. So maybe Laurel and Donathan actually do break away earlier, or try to break away if it's under the old format.
Yeah, no, I think that's totally right. Like, we talked about for so many years, like, yes, you switch to the final three, and now Which seemed to be like a result of them being unhappy with how many like Rob Cesternino types would get cut in third place. Like the most competitive finalists would tend to bubble. So hey, let's open it up to three, and now that person's going to get in. And instead, what we see is obviously that person just gets cut at fourth instead. So how do we get around that? Let's make Final Four not a vote either. And what do you see being the natural progression of how this game is going to evolve now that people know to expect the Final Four? Is that going to go better for the people that production loves, or are they going to get fucking obviously clipped even sooner? Well, what do you think about, just quickly, the idea of, now that we have this at Final Four, should Idols now expire at Final Six? So there is at least one round where you can get that Ben Dreeberg in person out. They have to win the immunity,
yes,
to stay alive.
Absolutely, because this is my biggest objection to the new format, even above everything else. It's that in concert with this overabundance of twists and advantages and Idols, it is so easy to just catapult your way into that Final Four where you have two shots at the end, not by virtue of setting yourself up well in the game or by the conventional means of just going on this immunity run, but by just having an advantage at the right time. And if you have an idol or a legacy advantage or something else that can like carry you part of the way there, it becomes very realistic actually to just rely on a scavenger hunt to get you to the Final Four and not anything else that you typically associate with Survivor.
Well, I mean, that was literally Ben's game plan, is I'm going to find the idol, I'm going to play it tonight, and I'm going to not go to sleep until I have it again. And that's a lot easier to do when they put it right under his pillow on the raft.
Sure, but I think there should be at least one round which is conventional in terms of how you're able to get people out going into the endgame.
I totally agree.
But let's go back to that question then, because how do you think Wendell goes down in Survivor history then if he goes out at Final Four under the old format?
How Wendell goes down, I think he would be like the next Malcolm figure. Probably not to the same extent as Malcolm, but I think that would be essentially how he was received. This is very similar to how David Wright was received, where I'm sure they would have spent the entire season still building Dom and Wendell up as the two big contenders. And for us, it would have just been a matter of which of them gets clipped at Final Four, rather than which of them is going to lose in the finals because the Fire Challenge brought them both there.
Yeah, I'm imagining now, what happens if Ken wins Final Immunity, takes Hannah, Adam and David have to battle it out in Fire, David wins, and then everything just changed from there. Like, the one event that gave us any hope in 2016 of Adam winning Survivor, that's now out of the history books. We have David winning instead, which is still a great outcome, but the entire tone of the season has to change then, I think. And I think there are so many other seasons where you just add this one little quirk in and everything changes. So when we talk about winner rankings under this new format, we're not comparing necessarily Dominic to Tyson and to Natalie White. We might be comparing him to Brett and Ozzy and Tina as a two-time Survivor winner, and maybe everything else has to change.
Yeah. Well, the most interesting thing to me about what potentially looks different if this is just a normal season of Survivor, I stand by Dom and Wendell still getting by far the two biggest edits, assuming they're the winner and the bubble person. But in that timeline where Dominic wins that final immunity challenge, probably wins pretty close to unanimously, I think the one thing that would look very different is Dom's winner edit. I think we would have heard, I don't think it would look totally different. Like, I think he did, for someone who didn't win the game, get a ton of credit for all of the great things that he did out on the island. But if you will recall, Dominic, we came in here before the finale and I said, maybe the most compelling thing, the most compelling reason for me that I would think Wendell would have a better chance than I otherwise would is we are hearing so little about Dominic's family compared to what we got from Ben Dreebergen and Jeremy, who are in tremendously similar situations. I suspect that would be the biggest difference, is we would get a lot more about why the audience should emotionally want Dominic to win if he did end up winning.
We might get even less of that Final Six conversation, which apparently was already fairly edited down and looked quite tame compared to how intimidating Dom actually was towards Donathan. But maybe in this modern era Survivor, which is all about big moves and so on, maybe they would amp that up even further. Like, if Dom won, that kind of Godfather-esque display would be the crowning point of the finale then.
Yeah, I definitely think that is in play for sure. I think, as I said, I think Dom got a tremendous edit for someone who did not win the game, but I think it would have been taken up to a 12 if he had ended up actually pulling this through here, which, again, he would have if this had happened any year prior to 2018.
So one thing that I hope we can get around to during the off season is an updated Survivor winner rankings, because the Big Brother one was a ton of fun to do, and we haven't done that kind of extensive Survivor debate in a long, long time now. So I'm hoping we can get around to that. When we do, I don't know how we're going to stack up the people who played in this new Final Four era versus the people who played before, because does it make sense to just compare them as it is? So you have the 36 people who actually won, or 35, I guess. Thank you, Sandra. And now you just compare them and it's like against like. Or do you have to now consider these possibilities of, like, is Dom on the list kind of with Wendell and there's like an asterisk split between the two of them? Or how do you end up figuring that out?
So for me, and I got this question on Twitter about, hey, you said Ben Driebergen is the distant 35 out of 35 because of the fire winners out of because of the fire twist. Is Wendell now, are they tied for 35 and 36? And the answer to me is no. It's going to be completely contextual when evaluating any winner. And in a case where everyone knew from the beginning of the season that this is how the Final Four is going to play out, that's totally different for me.
So is it a bigger change to the game than, let's say, idols versus pre-idols or any of these other twists which have become a bedrock of the show over time then?
Yeah, I think it's a huge shift. Like, to me, this movement towards the fire challenge is essentially the producers rejecting the idea of how a survivor vote goes down at what might be argued as the most crucial round when people are trying to pick who they sit in the finals against to win the $1 million. The producers are saying, we don't like how things tend to play at this round, so we're just going to completely change it. But unlike season 35, I have no issue with it when everyone goes into the season knowing that that's how it's going to be. And with that in mind, I would not necessarily have Wendell way down at the bottom of my rankings just because it was only through the fire twist that he won the season. All right. I'm sure we'll get more into Wendell and his plays in history a little later on in this podcast for sure. Actually, before we move on from the fire challenge, one thing I definitely do want to say, when Dom is trying to find someone to face off in the fire against Wendell, he seemingly picks Angela by process of elimination on the grounds that Laurel, it seems, has never made a fire. Not just didn't learn before she came out here. It's now day 38, and she's never done it once. I know we've spent a lot of the season talking about things Laurel may have wanted to do differently, and I do think she's taken far too much heat in that capacity over the course of all of Ghost Island. However, this, to me, especially in a season, and this will be the case in every season going forward, where you knew this was in play from day one, to show up there on day 38, unable to make fire, is absolutely unforgivable. Am I being hyperbolic here, Dom? Or would you agree that when you know that that is the game mechanic that will determine who makes the finals and who doesn't, how could you ever show up on day 38 unable to make fire?
I agree with you, and the only counterargument I can think of is it's hard to actually find opportunities to practice, and I wonder if when people come in knowing that this is a new format, if one of the best strategic moves you can make is to just hide the magnesium after a certain point. Like, literally don't give people the opportunity to get any practice in, because that might be the difference ultimately. Mm-hmm. Like, that could be a swing of hundreds of thousands of dollars, just people getting the chance to practice beforehand.
Well, I was going to say, I don't know how many years this would go back, but I guarantee you can hear me in podcasts years and years and years ago saying the two things you must do before going out to play Survivor are, one, memorize as many of the puzzles as you can, and two, be a master of making fire with flint. And my reason was, this was when it came up, was Philippines, all the way back then, where I said we were looking at the possibility of a 2-2 tie, and everyone came into the season knowing that fire would be that theoretical tiebreaker. So if you get down to that final four, if you're a master of making fire, you essentially have the majority as long as you have one other person on your side. And now, obviously, when people know going in, not just to Ghost Island, but for all future seasons, I know this is going to sound like insane Colin Stone hyperbole, which it probably is, but if I was casting for this show and we got our final cast, I would have a dozen alternates on hand, ready to fly out to location for anyone who showed up to the airport and was not at least passable at making fire. If you are not, if you know that this is how the game is going to go and you haven't practiced this, you're off the show.
So there's an impromptu final exam in the terminal at LAX, and anyone who fails is just thrown off
the
show. Yeah.
Making a bunch of fire in the middle of LAX, I don't see what could go wrong there. But, yeah, no, I truly do believe that. I understand they're not going to believe that as producers. They're still going to put recruits out there and plenty of people who don't know how to make fire. But truly, if I was, advising people who were about to go play, it is absolutely baffling that anyone could show up to the airport not having mastered fire with flint long ahead of time. Who cares if they are hiding the magnesium on you on day 35? I obviously knew to do this long ago.
And this has to become a standard part of the pre-game rituals now, the preparation. Like if you're going to the gym and you're getting a job which allows you to communicate with more people and you're trying to practice that, this is another thing that you have to practice. And if you don't have to be Garrett Adelstein putting 2,000 hours in, to find some time by yourself with some kindling and a piece of flint and just practice this, because like if this ends up costing you $1 million and the title, then that is not only heartbreaking for you, but it's unforgivable. It's the easiest mistake you can possibly avoid.
Right. And to me, it is it's a good parallel would be on Big Brother seasons. Everybody knows that the end game competitions come down to quizzes about what days certain things happened in the house. And there are people on seasons, famously Tim and Cass on BB Can 4, who like probably would have had the game in the bag, but they outright acknowledged, hey, I know it's going to come down to that. I don't care. I'm too cool to study, or whatever the reason was. They refused to study, and it cost them the game. And that, like, any Survivor player who would have won the game if they'd just been able to make fire deserves to lose the game.
So Angela ultimately will lose this fire challenge, and I think it would be dishonoring the memory of Angela to actually spend any time talking about her. So we'll move swiftly on to the final three here. We will get the showdown that we were promised from the very start of Dom versus Wendell, with Laura in there as a third. And coming into this, I know that people were flagging up ahead of time, if this is the final three we get, this would be one of the, I don't want to say the most even final threes of all time, because I think the jury was never going to give Laurel a fair shake, really, but certainly one of my favorite final threes, just in terms of the personalities involved and the journey that they took collectively to get there to the end.
Right. There haven't been too many really kind of toss-up final twos in a long, like final finalists in a long time. And when it did happen, it was because they were final twos a lot of the time. If we would think through like competitive final threes, Sophie and Coach, I think, could have gone either way if Coach had given some different answers. And Ozzy and Yule is the other one that really stands out to me. But what am I forgetting any? Sarah and Brad, I guess you could argue, but I don't know if Brad was ever even realistically in there with a chance. When is the last time that we saw something even close to this competitive?
Yeah, I completely agree with you on all of that. Now that we're at Final Tribal, was there anything from that really stood out to you or that you think is worthy of further discussion?
I don't need to go into a ton of detail on like who asked what questions to whom.
In part, that's because not many people actually asked any questions. There were a solid half of the jury that never really got to ask anything. And this is a predictable downside of this new Final Tribal format, which is that you have certain jury for people, if you like, that get to speak on behalf of the group, and the quieter players or the less distinguished players never really get to have their moment anymore. And you might think that's good. We don't want to have to sit through a question from Libby that might be pro forma, or you know, what is Sebastian really going to say that's going to dazzle us and is a good use of this time in this incredibly packed finale. But it is worth thinking about, like, as it turns out, the invisible jurors split for the two finalists. So you have Libby and Janet on one side and then Sebastian and Chelsea on the other. But I can imagine if four of the votes for Wendell were Libby, Jenna, Sebastian, Chelsea, and then it's like plus Kellen or something, and that's the five, like that's a coalition that delivered him the win, there would be a lot of confusion and uproar over exactly why the jury voted the way they did. In part because the entire season, they haven't bothered to give those people a voice. And now, in this crucial moment, we don't get to hear why they voted the way they did. And it would be so easy for people to write that off as a bit of jury or to invent their own interpretations of what happened.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I think, frankly, like when we have a vote this close, there's probably going to be a lot of second guessing about all of the different relationships with any kind of juror, and people's votes being more live than I think they may tend to be at most final tribal councils. And like, I do think that this is why, I don't want to totally sell the fire challenge short. Like, I'm grateful that we did get, because of the fire challenge, the first really compelling finalist that we've had in a very, very, at least 5 years, as far as I like Coach and Sophie, would be the last time I can think of where it was really this up in the air for me, as far as who, not only who I thought was going to win, but also who I like wanted to win. And so I was really excited while it was, a final tribal council that I wasn't a fan of how it came about. I did think it was great actually having this really competitive final tribal council going on. And actually with that, kind of a lot with that in mind, one thing that I really did like, and that's been more of, it's the time has been like creeping further and further past 10 p.m. every single time now on finale night. At this final tribal council, I don't think we even started final tribal council until it was already after 10 p.m. And my hot take on that front is good. I don't need the reunion at all. I don't like, I know part of it was doled out to Kevin Hart, and that probably could have been time better spent. But frankly, I wouldn't care if they did 2.5 hours of the actual episode and far less of the reunion. Where are you on that? Well, I guess I phrased this really poorly, but my just kind of overall thoughts on Final Tribal Council were, much like the rest of this season, it seemed like a toss-up to me. It seemed like they both did a really good job, and Dom seemed to understand the things that people weren't loving about his kind of endgame approach and was trying to resolve that, and Wendell seemed to understand how to stay on message and keep people happy with him. I'm curious, though, Dom, who did you think was going to win as this was playing out?
So I thought it was going to be Dom, and then over the course of the questioning, I thought, as he was taking so much heat, is this actually just going to be Wendell, or is this the final doubt in Dom's ways, the final obstacle that he has to clear to eventually clinch a title after so long? And I kind of thought that's what was going on. But then when he was on the defensive over that final six display, and he was saying that nobody got what he was trying to do, he did seem flustered and kind of on the back foot, and that didn't seem very winner-esque to me. But on the other hand, Wendell also had some times when he was written off by various jury members, or they just kind of dismissed him out of hand, and I thought his overall approach was a little bit less coherent in terms of, it was unclear exactly what he was arguing for himself. Was he actually the brains behind the operation, as Kellen and someone else alluded to? Was he playing a different type of game from Dom, where Dom was just the brawn who was alienating people and he was trying to be more social? So was he beating Dom at his own game? Was he playing a different game? What was the actual difference that was being articulated there? And that seemed to vary between answers. And if you ask me, what is the case for Wendell coming out of Final Tribal? I think it's harder to nail that down than it would be to say what the case for Dom was.
Right. I think Wendell, he just did a good job of staying Wendell that everyone liked and wanted to work with all season.
And that's the thing, because we can say that Dom maybe lost some jury votes along the way, but are you going to say that Dom had bad jury management when the vote was so close that, like, one vote changing either way swings the entire outcome? Because this isn't a Russell Hand situation. This isn't, he was so clueless about how he was coming off in front of the jury that no one would ever even entertain the idea of voting for him anymore. He got 5 votes. He got literally half of the votes, and depending on the combination of people there, like, he very easily could have won the season. So this doesn't strike me as someone failed to consider the jury or had bad jury management and that's why they lost. It's he had good jury management, and the guy he was with had even better jury management.
He got 5 votes up against Wendell.
Yeah, and this is what I'm saying. Like, is Wendell so good socially that he was able to get that many votes against this amazingly dominant player, or is Dom still good enough socially that he was able to keep those votes against Wendell, who everyone seemed to be in love with?
Right. And again, I, for the third or fourth time this podcast, would bring up to anyone saying Dom didn't play an adequate social game, like, please recall, if this is filmed in 2016 and 20 instead of 2017, he wins unanimously.
Yeah, when Dom wins 10-0 against like Laurel and Angela, maybe no one would be trying to like retcon in this idea that Dom had bad jury management. And that's
right.
I think that's actually true of a lot of players who end up meeting that kind of fate, where they end up not facing their desired opponents. And of course they get slaughtered because they didn't plan to face that person for exactly that reason. So I don't hold it against Steven that he lost 7-0 to JT, because in any plausible timeline that he's hoping for, he doesn't face JT. He beats Erin 7-0, or he goes against Tard, and maybe it's a close vote. And it seems weird to downgrade people who made the finals and made that extra step because they lost in an outcome that they weren't hoping for to begin with.
Right, yeah. Like, LeBron deserves credit for going to the finals and losing to Golden State, just for making the finals. He's up against the best team of all time. That's not the strongest parallel, but it's the same kind of idea of they still did everything right. They just were up against something that they couldn't control. And hopefully, a couple of weeks from now, LeBron will have beaten Golden State, and that statement will sound even more ludicrous. But anyway, I was thinking, as I was watching it, that Dom had a stronger overall finale, and I thought Final Tribal Council was kind of a toss-up. It really wasn't for me until Jeff came back and said, all right, I'm going to read the votes, that I said, oh shit, it's a tie and Wendell's going to win.
Yeah, when he said that, my first reaction was, wait, what? And then it slowly started to sink in, and I think...
Really?
What?
I mean, for me, it was, as soon as he said, I'm going to read the votes, there was no question what was going on.
Obviously, there was no question. Like, I knew it was going to be a tie, and therefore Laura was going to break the tie, and Wendell was going to win. But it was so sudden and so unexpected, and the way Jeff set it up, it's not like that there was any clean transition. It was, he was walking, and exactly the same time he would say, I'll read the votes back in the States, he just said, I'm going to read the votes. And it took a moment to actually process what was happening, and just the sheer gravity of seeing that for the first time after 36 seasons.
Yeah, no, you are right, and we should talk about that. And I don't mean to, like, shame you for not immediately...
Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
No, but what I mean is, for me, as someone who was sitting there going, okay, I think Dom's got this, when Jeff then says, I'm going to read the votes, it was over like that for me. Like, immediately, it's over.
And it was over for Dom, too. You saw his head just sink into his hands and that expression on his face. He knew he was done. And
right.
I guess there's something to be said for, if you have to lose to your best friend in the most iconic way possible, but at the same time, you've played your heart out for 39 days and you're losing by one vote. That is, it's got to be absolutely heartbreaking.
For sure, especially for the fifth or sixth time now, when you would have won the game unanimously.
Yes,
if
yes.
Timing had been slightly better.
Yeah, if you would just send your tape in 2 years ago, you would be a millionaire right now.
So right. That
was your big strategic blunder in the game.
Seriously. But Dom, what did you think of having our first tie now in 36 seasons of Survivor?
To me, this almost completely redeemed that finale. Because I think having that Dom and Wendell showdown would have been fun, but that's kind of what we were expecting the whole time. For it to end in such a dramatic and unexpected way, to me, that does lift the season up a bit. That having it end in such a unique and iconic moment, that does erase some of the boredom that we had to trudge through for weeks on end, as everybody said they would make a move, and then the predictable thing happened every single time. For this to culminate in the most unpredictable ending that we've had in as long as I can remember now, it was truly a sight to behold.
Right. I mean, I remember we were coming in here last week talking about making our predictions for who was going to win and by what margin, and we kept going back and forth. I think it's going to be 6-4 Dom. You said, I'm going 6-4 Wendell, and then switch to 6-4 Dom, and then switch to 7-3 Dom. We briefly touched on the idea that it could be a tie, but it never really seriously crossed my mind. But as you said, this tie redeems the finale in your eyes. I would say this tie redeems a lot of the issues that I had with this season to that point in my eyes, where all of it comes together a lot more completely when you know that this is where it's going to end up.
So do you think this is a season that will get better on a rewatch, knowing what this is building towards, or does it get worse on a rewatch because that shock of the final moment is taken away now and there's nothing to redeem it at the end?
Unfortunately, I think it's going to be the latter. I think this is a season, as with many seasons, that are just for essentially pagongings. I would not fault anyone who said they were going to sit down and love and enjoy rewatching the whole pre-merge and merge episode and finale, but I really think this season's going to get killed for that entire post-merge leading up to the finale. Like, as far as rewatchability goes, I do not see myself rewatching this any of those episodes, at least anytime soon. I could easily see myself sitting down watching the entire pre-merge in one day, but I will be skipping that whole post-merge. What do you think?
Yeah, I can get behind that. I might watch select moments from the post-merge, like the merge episode, I think, is still one of the all-time classics, but I think you can afford to jump around here and there if you're ever rewatching the season.
maybe, I mean, one of my hotter takes of the season, apparently, is I didn't think the merge vote was that good. And frankly, I thought we spent way too much time building up Dom against Chris Noble over the entire, like, my biggest beef with the pre-merge is how much of it is spent on Dom and Chris Noble. And the reason I say that about the merge is I don't understand who was coming away from that pre-merge, entering that merge episode, feeling like, well, this could go either way. It seemed like, obviously, this is going to go Dom's way.
Is that the worst thing, though? Like, if you know Chris is going to lose, and you don't have to waste time establishing the fact that Chris might actually succeed, and you can just bury him as much as possible, that might lead to better TV, ultimately.
Well, I mean, what I thought was great about the merge was when I believed Chris might get that idol and play it, and then something weird would happen. But knowing that that didn't end up happening, even though he only had two nights to play it, to me, honestly, almost makes the merge even more distorted in favor of Dom.
Okay, I can see that too.
All right, but yeah, no, I don't know. I guess let's get into, before we get into like thoughts on Wendell and Dom and their place in history, just this season in history, where does Ghost Island roughly fall for you?
So I saw that you had ranked all the seasons again recently on Twitter, and Ghost Island was in the low 20s range, is that right?
High 20s,
low,
yeah.
High,
close
whatever.
To 30.
Yes, yes. It was low down, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think I had it at 29, so it was very close to the 30s.
I think I would put it a bit higher than you. So I was going to say low 20s, meaning high 20s, but below the teens is what I'm getting at here. I think it's a fine season. I wouldn't mind rewatching it. There were parts of it, especially just the journey of Dom and Wendell, which I found compelling enough, and I think I would on a second viewing as well. But it's a season of highs and lows for me. Like, the pre-merge was great. I thought I liked the merge episode more than you did. And I don't think the pre-merge, the post-merge rather, like, you had the Dez episode, which I thought was great. That's colored a bit by it being the one we had at the live know-it-all, so it was a different watching environment for that. But outside of that, it did lag a bit, but then the finale boosted it back up again. So I would say in like the 22 to 23 range, if I had to guess.
Okay, that's a pretty narrow range. I looked it up. I have it at 29. So I have seven seasons. That I have Worlds Apart, Heroes, Healers, Hustlers, Thailand, Karamoan, Nicaragua, Redemption Island, and One World below this. But like, this for me is just below Game Changers, where I would for sure rather rewatch Game Changers and at least have that excitement of having Ceri and Sandra and JT and Aubrey and everyone back out there versus watching Dom and Wendell yet again kind of watch through the season almost knowing that they're going to just steamroll it, and in this case literally knowing exactly how it's going to play out.
And also, if you're not a fan of Dom and Wendell, there's really nothing right to redeem the season for you. It's got to be in the low 30s.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, Laurel gets up and casts the deciding vote for a winner, which Jeff is going to read back in America. We arrive in L.A., and by a vote of 1-0, Dom, Wendell is our winner of Survivor Ghost Island. So we've talked a little bit about Ghost Island this season and where that's going to rank historically roughly for us. What do you think about Wendell and his winning game? We touched on this, like him not necessarily having the same kind of taint on his win that Ben Driebergen did, but how far up are you willing to put Wendell?
I was going to say, I was hoping the tiebreaker vote would be Samantha from the audience, but it turns out Wendell would have won anyway under that, so I guess he had a great social game with her too. So for me, Wendell, he seems just so naturally cut out for Survivor. It's the argument that people make about Amanda Kimmel, which is like she's above average at everything by just enough that it doesn't seem threatening, so she's always going to do decently well. It seems so unlikely to me that Wendell is ever going to play himself out of the game too early or just randomly get taken out pre-merge. He seems like he's always going to be in there with a decent shot. And he seems so good socially with so many different types of people that, like, he's always going to have room to play. He's never going to be backed into a corner that there's just absolutely no way out of. And, like, when you have someone like that who is great socially, who's good in challenges, who seems to have a good head on his shoulders, even if he's maybe not as cutthroat as someone like Dom is, then they're always going to do pretty well. And, like, it's never going to be dumb money, I guess, betting on them to win any given season.
Right. To me, like, the reason I have Ben so low on my list, and truly, Ben will always be the bottom of the list for me, is because Ben did virtually nothing to demonstrate that he was, like, good at playing Survivor come the merge time. It was purely because of, like, Idols and the Fire Challenge miraculously appearing on his season that he ended up winning. It's not like he was even winning immunity challenges, whereas Wendell, I still feel like, if this were a normal season, would have been totally in there as one of the front runners to win. And if this had been that normal season, I know I've said many times at this point that Dom was very close to winning a unanimous jury vote if he just times this differently. You know, if Wendell just wins that last challenge, he's the one who's going to win the unanimous jury vote if this is a conventional season. So I definitely would not say Wendell is getting docked virtually at all for me for winning because of the fire, especially in a season where everyone knew that that was going to be the situation. Like, Wendell, to me, I would probably have right in that same, I would probably have, frankly, even above my, like, beloved Denise Stapley range. Like, I think Wendell is a tremendously talented Survivor player who played a completely solid game, basically from start to finish.
I dock him fewer points than I would dock Denise from taking his partner to the end, because he actually beat his partner. And however close that margin was, there's at least something to be said for that. That, like, if you are so good that you can afford to make what would be a mistake normally, then go ahead if you want to, right? Like, I wouldn't recommend it, mm-hmm. but if you can get away with it, then why not?
Yeah, where do you think Dom is going to fit in the kind of pantheon of Survivor history? Is he almost I don't want to put out such a lofty name, but to me, I could see one name that he would remind me a bit of after their job losing in the finals would be Aubrey. Is he almost like the new Aubrey popular person who people feel like got almost robbed?
See, I haven't heard any of that dialogue, really. And that's interesting to me, because I think you can build a case by the standards that people normally say for claiming that Aubrey was robbed or whoever else was robbed, that Dom was robbed too. And yet I think Wendell is popular enough with the audience as well as the other players out there that you're not really seeing much of that. But I think Dom is in these discussions now for Bear to Never Win, although I don't think he can actually replicate that performance anytime soon. Like, if he comes back in the next few years, he's going to have a real hard time of it. It's going to be like Tony in Game Changers and not Aubrey in Game Changers.
Right. We got news recently about season 38 potentially having a few returnees, and my only thought was, for the love of God, Dominic, turn this down.
But
do
by
not
contrast,
go yet.
I think if Wendell was invited to go on season 38, he actually would have a decent shot. And that's the thing. I think Dom has maybe a higher ceiling. He's capable of more flash movers and getting himself out of these tough situations than Wendell might be. But I think Wendell's consistency is going to serve him better in the long term. Like, I don't think he's going to flame out as often, or no one's going to take a shot at him because he is this this shady, brash character. Like, Wendell's always going to be able to fade into the background if he wants to, and that's a great quality to have.
Right. I would say, I'd say Dom is probably more likely to return than Wendell at this point, although I suspect Wendell will probably be there if we ever do get an all-winter season. I'm going to be thrilled about that for sure, and I would love to see Wendell back, but I think Dom is the one that they're going to want to bring back sooner. And my initial thought, and I alluded to this a second ago, but like, I really feel like the best favor Dom can do for himself, it doesn't matter what the theme is, if it's all-stars, if it's him and newbies, or if it's like a Game Changers thing where he's one of a few heavy hitters among a bunch of other people who are technically returnees but really just there trying to make a name for himself. I think regardless of the format, the most important thing for Dom is letting time pass, letting people forget about Dom from Survivor Ghost Island.
Yeah, there will always be a hot new thing. There will be some new man or woman of the hour in a few years. Give it time, and hopefully by then people will have cooled off a bit. Although, how much time is he meant to give it? Because Tony had 6 seasons between his first time and his second time, and that didn't seem to turn out so well. So is Dom just meant to wait 5 years until people have hopefully forgotten about him? Or like, what is he meant to do in that spot?
I mean, if I'm the one advising him, yes. That is why would you go out to...
It seems like the ratings are good enough that Survivor's going to be on the air for the foreseeable future unless Jeff gets bored and wants to quit, even though he has basically the best gig on television. But
what I mean, for me, it's like, Dominic, if he were to go back out in the next 3 years, I think he would be a massive front runner to be one of the early boots. And I think one thing that is meaningful for him in determining whether or not to go out and play Survivor is you don't get to go home unless you're Vetus and you demand, or Jimmy Johnson, you don't get to go home if you're the second one voted out. His wife still has to take care of those kids for another 2 months.
Maybe you have to go out there, take the loss, and then hope to do well in your third season, but that seems like that's a lot of commitment at that point. So maybe Dom is one and done, actually. Maybe he understands that things are only going downhill from here, realistically, and it's better to leave on a high note.
I think you have to just wait for the all-star heroes versus villains 2 kind of we're pulling people from every era kind of blowout, and just count on the fact that you will be one of the people who is at least making it in through the casting for this. But I don't think Dom is the kind of person who wants to go do Survivor just to go do Survivor again. I think he would want to do it if he thought he had a good chance, and I really don't think that's realistic anytime soon. So why would you go out there just to hopefully make it to like fifth or sixth one out, being like, as far as I'm concerned, like a realistic, almost best case scenario, if it's anytime soon for Dom, when you have so much going on back home?
It's much easier for him to avoid the fate of Tony if he is playing with Tony or with Russell,
right,
or with
exactly,
other people like
exactly.
That.
Right, that's exactly right. Yeah, so I'm very much looking forward to Dom 2.0 if it is sometime way in the future, but I would be very nervous for him if it's anytime soon. All right, so I guess actually, quickly, let's give some parting thoughts on Laurel. And I know we've been throwing the name Denise Stapley around in talking about Wendell and his kind of where he falls with the winner edit. And Denise was another person, or within the winner rankings, not winner edit. Denise was a person that I spent the bulk of this season comparing more to Laurel, feeling like she had very much Denise vibes that I was super into, would love Denise. And I actually think Laurel choosing to stay with the guys and then voting for Wendell to win the end, I don't think that takes away anything from the Denise side of things for me. Like, as you've already alluded to earlier, Denise, the one fault we regularly take with her is, for everything she did right, she was willing and interested and trying to go to the end with Malcolm where she would lose. So I don't think it's crazy to, like, I'm not going to try to retcon Laurel being a ton like Denise out of my history of takes.
As in, you're not going to pretend that you never said that and then come up with some
right.
new take.
I think this almost further serves to validate it.
Okay. I can see that. Certainly the similarity I see between the two of them is they are such good listeners. They're so good at making you feel comfortable around them and opening up to them and knowing that it's not going to come across as judgmental or that it's going to be used against you in some way down the line. And I think both of them display, and I think Laurel in particular, actually, maybe more so than Denise, display this kind of thoughtfulness about people and about the game that I really enjoy seeing, even if it's not always deployed in the way that I would hope for it to be as a viewer. Like, we're all sitting at home hoping for the move to be made, and it'll be interesting to hear from Laurel exactly why she didn't make the move ultimately. But just, I was a big fan of Laurel on the season, and I really like seeing players like that. And maybe this is my own personal bias coming into play, but I think so much of the criticism this season was overblown, and she is taking the flak for a collective decision on the part of 5 or 6 different people not to make a move against Dom and Wendell, and you would need multiple of those people to be on board for that move to even happen in the first place.
Yeah, I think she really did, as we talked about being a possibility, really fall into that reverse Sierra Easton role where it seemed like they want the viewers to come away with the message of what Laurel should have done is make the big move. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's an unfortunate spot. Like, I think she's taking a lot of the heat for that entire Navidi crew and potentially others. But there we go. Great seeing Laurel out there on the season for sure. The reunion, not a whole lot going on in the reunion. We had James Clement, still unclear. Eric Reichenbach out there to relive their past traumas. That was a lot of fun. And Dom, a segment we like to do on our Patreon podcast is every so often you'll see when watching a CBS show, the lower third, there will be a little text on the bottom of the screen that'll pop up promoting some new show. And this is a segment we call Coming This Fall, where we get to relive in our classic rewatch seasons all of these great CBS shows that came and went so quickly. And the reunion, Dom, this is a great Coming This Fall. We have TKO with Kevin Hart. One of the games that we do in the Coming This Fall segment is setting the line over under the Gary Unmarried line of 37 episodes. episodes here for TKO with Kevin Hart. I'm sorry for the non-patrons who don't understand what I'm saying, but Gary Unmarried was one of the shows that we recently went back through and profiled. That ran for 37 episodes, which seems like a pretty fair over-under for these random CBS shows that pop up in the lower third. So, Dom, over-under the Gary Unmarried line of 37 episodes for TKO.
Look, I'm not going to apologize to the non-patrons. That's a decision that you made. You have to live with the consequences of that. But anyway, I'm way taking the under on 37 episodes. I think double digits is achievable, but might be a stretch. 37 is completely out of reach.
Yeah, the thing is, Kevin Hart is one of the biggest stars on the planet today. I think he alone will get you through 8 to 12 episodes, but I don't know if you're going to get much further than that. This might be looking more like the worst week line of like 15 episodes, maybe even a little optimistic. Yeah, but speaking of coming this fall, by the way, it's been a couple hours since we plugged this. Again, Heroes vs. Villains coming to Patreon very soon. Patreon.com/Dom and Colin. All right, Dom, who from Ghost Island do you think, along with potentially Dom, may be returning for some future seasons?
So Wendell, if there is a Norwinner season down the line, Donathan maybe has a shot. Michael Yerger, despite we said about to Jeff at the challenge of, oh, well, this might be the only chance I get to play. He doesn't believe that. Jeff doesn't believe that. None of us believe it. He is coming back. The only question is how soon and how many times. Beyond that, though, is there anyone that stands out that I'm forgetting?
I would say, yeah, Michael, Wendell, and Dom would be the biggest three for me. And then I would also say Donathan and Kellen are in there with some real return chances.
Yeah, Kellen definitely. And also, just pick a pre-merger at random, and there might be a decent chance that they come back if there's a second chance style season or they need people to fill out a roster sometime.
Yeah, I would be up for that. Or just bring all of them back for season 37, Survivor David versus Goliath, and have them be the David tribe, and have them play against a bunch of other people who don't know they've already done this once before.
Or you could just rerun this season, knock it down to 16 people, taking out like Sebastian, Libby, Angela and someone else, and just have that be the season. And I think that would be a substantial improvement, but we can explore that sometime. One question I have for you, which I don't think I've seen come up anywhere else yet, is we praised James Lim and the rest of the Lolos for blindsiding Dom and Wendell, taking out Morgan. In retrospect, knowing what we know now, with the benefit of hindsight, it seems like Dom and Wendell should have been, like, one of them should have been gone there, right? And maybe everything else changes after that.
I'm sure if they know Dom will not play any idol that he may or may not have, they would probably go for Dom instead.
And I'm sure Morgan actually seemed poised for a deep run herself if she had survived in the game, but you have to imagine that, like, taking out Wendell there, taking out Dom, that seems like one of those big missed opportunities now, even if the move itself as a concept was excellent and executed very well.
One scary thing for me is I'm not sure I could pick Morgan out of a lineup right now if I saw her just on the street. Like, I would recognize Gonzalez. I would recognize Jacob Derwin and Brendan and James. I'm struggling to put a face to the name Morgan Rickey in my mind right now.
You're so fixated on Morgan McLeod, whatever the Morgan was from Guatemala, the magician's assistant.
McDevitt?
Yeah.
McDewitt? Something. Yeah.
That should be the next Survivor parlor game, just all the Morgans, all the Natalies from Survivor history. You have to, like, match the faces to the names.
that's like a future Final Immunity challenge.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Dom, we are going to, of course, be back in September for Survivor David versus Goliath, which is a very solid candidate for the most embarrassing theme title of all time, although I certainly recognize I've probably been saying that every single season we've previewed since Millennials versus Gen X. They just keep getting weirder.
And it's not getting any better from here. It's only going downhill. So if you're not used to it yet, get used to it.
Yeah. Dom, anything else you want to get out there before we close the book on Ghost Island, this is like our 13th full season of Survivor coverage.
So we've done 24 to 36 the whole way through now. So we've been doing this for a solid third of the show's run, which for a show that's been on since 2000 is a pretty weird thing to be able to say.
Yeah. Well, I am all out on Ghost Island unless you have anything else.
I was just going to mention the survey again. You can find that at my pin tweet, at DomHRV. I'm sure you're on Twitter too, but we don't need to get into that.
It's fine.
You can find it on the blog page, domandcolin.com. But yeah, that's going to do it for me too.
All right. Well, we will be talking to you guys very soon, I'm sure, with whatever else we're going to have going on this off season. And once again, if you want to roll with us for Patreon, Heroes versus Villains, hour a week bonus episodes, $5 a month. You show up, you also get all of it, over 13 hours of Big Brother 10 coverage to hold you over until those start dropping. So patreon.com/Dom and Colin. I am, of course, on Twitter at Colin Stone, which Dom was very rude not to mention, but I'm sure everyone already knew that. I am officially out of things, so we will get you guys out of here now. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back very soon, I'm sure. Take care, everybody.